using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, the 31st of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 535 of America held hostage. And of course, it's not just America, it's the entire world. And today, Australian truckers are beginning their action. Their motto, their banner said, "Truckers keep Australia moving, not politicians. Never forget, they need us far more than we need them." As a matter of fact, we don't need them at all. And we're also going to take a look at the latest shameful operations of the American government, of the Biden administration. Stay with us. We will be right back to talk about Afghanistan and those who were left behind. Well, as is the case with most things that were begun by the CIA, it usually ends up as a CYA, a cover your posterior. And that is now what is happening with the Afghan war, just before the 20th anniversary of the lies that began it. We have the Biden administration now telling us, well, you know, is it... We don't know how many people are there. Well, I think it's maybe about 500. Maybe it's only about 250. Isn't that great? We only stranded and left behind to die 250 Americans. Oh, good. Good for you, Biden. That's a good accomplishment, isn't it? Below 250. We did not get everybody out that we wanted to get out. It was just August the 18th that Biden was telling George Stephanopoulos on ABC Sunday program. He said, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay to get them out. But we didn't. It was more important to obey our deadline and our agreements and our diplomatic relations with the Taliban. And so we left and left them behind. Now, these people, they're slitting the throats of comedians. They're executing a folk musician simply because music is not allowed by the Taliban and their understanding of Islam. And they're hunting down Christians, which we're throwing to the wolves, literally. I mean, there's 250 Americans. That's not counting how many Afghan allies are left behind, and it's not counting how many Afghan Christians who are already in Afghanistan, the country that was the government that was allied with us during our occupation of Afghanistan. That government was the second worst on earth in terms of persecuting Christians. But we were number one when it came to producing opioids in Afghanistan. What does that tell you about our government? What does that tell you about who runs our government, the CIA? What does that tell you about the complicit pentagram and all these military officers? The country that they were running, number one in production of opioids, as we were having an opioid epidemic here at home. Just imagine that. And number two in Christian persecution. So Biden says, if there's any American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them out. But now, we hear yesterday, well, there's still a small number. It's not a whole lot, only a couple of hundred people left behind to die, to be executed, to have their throats slit, their heads cut off, as well as the Christians that they sent away from the airport. Marine General Frank McKenzie, head of CENTCOM, Central Command. I'm here to announce the completion of our mission in Afghanistan. This is phony and disgusting as when we heard George W. Bush make his mission accomplished statements. Every single U.S. service member is now out of Afghanistan. Oh, there you go. See, It was important for them to get the military out so we didn't have any more military casualties, because everybody knows about the military when they die. But these 250 or 2,500, who knows how many? Do they really know? Do they care? Of course they don't. As I said before, their policy for Americans, for Afghan allies, for Christians left behind, their policy was don't ask, don't care. And so if these people just disappear, that's no problem. Not a problem, not any bad optics, no more bad press from Biden, because we don't know who these people are necessarily. And whenever individual cases surface, they'll probably be handled like individual cases are handled with vaccine deaths. Oh, well, that's, yeah, extenuating circumstances, yada, yada, yada. So we don't know who these Americans are. We don't know who their families are. Their pictures will not be in the newspapers. Let's just bug out and run away like they did from Bagram Air Force Base. And again, the insanity, I talked about that yesterday, the insanity of that, the decisions based on that, they were made by Biden and the Pentagram, absolutely brainless. Trump was right about the fact that a five-year-old could have done better. The problem is that Trump didn't have anybody with the integrity of a five-year-old advising him. You know, five-year-olds will tell you what's real. Not the bankers and the generals that were running the Trump administration, however. Running Trump, and Trump playing along with him. McKenzie said, the number of remaining Americans is in the very low hundreds. See, no problem. Did a great job. Good job. Good job. U.S. military allegedly blocked American citizens from entering the Kabul airport. Of course, we know that. I reported yesterday. By the way, the only people who were doing rescue missions, only Americans, you know, the other countries did rescue missions of their citizens, not the U.S. government. U.S. government has nothing but contempt for its own citizens, nothing but contempt for its own military. So they got more important things to work on. They've got to get all these people back so they can vaccinate them. That's the next step for the people that they claim to honor. Going to force vaccinate them with an experimental vaccine. But the people who were rescuing others who were there were retired military, as I pointed out yesterday, Operation Pineapple, kind of an underground railroad, Task Force Pineapple, whatever. I don't know exactly what they call it, Task Force. I've seen it reported that way, or Operation. But it's a veteran Green Beret says that Special Ops volunteers will keep evacuating Afghans even after the U.S. forces bug out and run away. He said the next step will be to figure out how to move them out of the country unconventionally without the use of the airport there. He says now we're pivoting into how do we move them out of the country unconventionally without the airfield. It's a little bit harder, but we're still going to do it, said retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. He said these are Afghan commandos, interpreters, their families, small children, several women that were 9 months pregnant. I'm not sure that they're focused on Americans who are left behind, who are working for contractors or whatever. And, of course, nobody cares about the Christians who are there, Afghan Christians. Certainly not the military. We moved them from sewage canals through checkpoints where they were beaten profusely, and we just guided them as best we could. It's an all-volunteer group of American veterans of the Afghan War. They began this last Wednesday. And as we look at this, just as you had Politico release information, we're going to talk about that here in a moment, about what they knew and when they knew it, you have information surfacing that Taliban offered control of the entire city of Kabul, not just the airport, but the entire city, to the U.S. forces, and we turned them down. The Washington Post had a lengthy piece on Sunday detailing the fall of Kabul. It circles back to everything that you already know, writes Matt Vespa at Town Hall. He said, however, buried midway through the piece is the Taliban offering the U.S. to take control, not just of the airport, but of all Kabul. Chaos was engulfing the city as news of the government's collapse spread, And again, it was collapsing rapidly because we just disappeared in the middle of the night from the largest airbase that we had there, the size of a city, and it was 30 miles away from Kabul. We just disappeared, didn't tell our allies. They start running for the hills. It's like, oh, it's over. They're not going to support us in any way, shape, or form. Then you see the president bugging out with all the money that he can stuff in the plane. Actually, he's got more money than he can stuff in the plane left on the tarmac. And that happened after the U.S. government said, well, that's it. We're not going to float you any more money to keep your government going. I mean, they just pulled the financial plug on these guys. So the central banker also bugged out of town. So those guys at the top of this corrupt government that we've been supporting for a long time, they got out right away. And chaos was happening across the country, but especially in Kabul. And so you had the Taliban, according to the Washington Post, said in the void, law and order began to break down with reports of armed gangs moving throughout the streets in a hastily arranged in-person meeting. Senior U.S. military leaders in Doha, including McKenzie, the guy who just said, yeah, you know, it's just a few hundred Americans. Who cares about that, right? That we're leaving behind. So that guy, McKenzie, commander of U.S. Central Command, spoke in person with Abdul Ghani Baradar, head of the Taliban's political wing, at an in-person meeting. And Baradar said, we have a problem. We have two options to deal with it. You, the United States military, could take responsibility for securing Kabul, or you have to allow us to do it. So throughout the day, Biden had remained resolute in his decision to withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan. The collapse of the Afghan government had not changed his mind. This is all being reported by the Washington Post, so of course you can believe it, right? This is not, in other words, this is, and I'll say this, you know, it does have credibility because these people typically support the Biden administration. But now that the Biden administration is making the military-industrial complex look bad, or perhaps it's because, as I said yesterday, you had Leon Panetta said, well, now we're going to have to go back in there and teach them a lesson. It's time for some revenge and make ourselves look good. So let's go back to Afghanistan and do this whole thing over again. That's a lot of what the what's happening in the press. Nevertheless, Washington Post goes on to say, McKenzie, again, this is the commander of U.S. Central Command. McKenzie, aware of those orders from the Biden administration to get all American troops out of Afghanistan, told Baradar that the U.S. mission was only to evacuate American citizens, Afghan allies, and others at risk. The U.S., he told Baradar, needed the airport to do that. On the spot, an understanding was reached, according to two other U.S. officials. The U.S. could have the airport until August the 31st. But the Taliban would control the city. And so the town hall author says, so if we had taken control of the city, which we could have done, they offered them the keys to the city and said, no, it's a little bit too much for me. There would have been no Taliban checkpoints, making access all but impossible. There would have been no beatings of Americans by the Taliban, no shaking down, saying, come back with some more money, maybe we'll let you in. No American passports would have been seized. It would have been chaotic, and it would have been difficult to get into Kabul, but they just did not want to commit the resources to do it after they dug a hole for themselves by abandoning Bagram Air Force Base. Pentagon prepared for mass casualty attack at the Kabul airport hours before the explosion. By the way, this just came out yesterday from Politico, and Politico points out that the Pentagon is very unhappy with them releasing this. They don't deny that it's true. They say that it is true. But they're not happy that they released this information nevertheless. And as I said on Sunday, I spoke to a person, a friend of mine who's used to be a Marine, was in 10 years ago. And he said, the question I've been asking everybody, writing letters to senators and so forth about, did they change rules of engagement? Because Marines are trained as part, especially because of this duty, they're trained to spot suicide vest people and to shoot them on sight. But not only that, and I didn't mention this yesterday, he said, everybody knows that this was coming. And I did mention it briefly. I said, you know, we had all these warnings about that specific area. They told everybody, go home. We have we're being told that there's going to be an attack. So they were on alert. They're trained for this. And yet, again, it appears that they had turned over a lot of this stuff to the Taliban themselves to control the entrance into the airport and other things. So were the Taliban doing security? Was it a change in the rules of engagement? Well, here's what Politico says. Just 24 hours before a suicide bomber detonated an explosive, senior military leaders gathered for the Pentagon's daily morning update on the deteriorating situation in Afghanistan. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin instructed more than a dozen of the department's top leaders around the world to make preparations for an imminent mass casualty event. General Mark Milley put away his rainbow flag and sat at the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He warned of significant intelligence indicating that the Islamic State's Afghanistan affiliate, ISIS-K, was planning a complex attack. See, we have a variant of ISIS now. We have the K variant, the Kappa, I guess. Commanders calling in from Kabul relayed that Abbey Gate, where American citizens had been told to gather in order to gain entrance to the airport, was highest risk. They even knew which one of the entrances was the one that was set up. They knew when, they knew where, they knew how, and they didn't do anything about it. American troops are still processing entrance into the airport at Abbey Gate at roughly 6 p.m. on Thursday in Kabul when a suicide bomber detonated his explosive vest there, killing nearly 200 people, including 13 U.S. service members. And oh, by the way, there were some other foreign nationals, or at least two or three from the U.K. We don't know how many Americans were there trying to get in because, you know, American citizens just don't count in anybody's book, right? We're the last. America last. Americans last, I should say. The transcript of these three conference calls, authenticated by a defense official, details conversations among the highest levels of Pentagon leadership. They said the projections ended up being deadly accurate. They knew exactly what was going to happen, when and where. This story is based, the Pentagon spokesman John Kirby said, quote, this story is based on the unlawful disclosure of classified information and internal deliberations of a sensitive nature. In other words, it's true. As soon as we became aware of the material divulged to the reporter, we engaged Politico at the highest levels to prevent the publication of information that would put our troops and our operations at the airport at greater risk. No, it didn't. Your dereliction of duty put people at greater risk. This is, again, Operation CYA. It puts their career, their reputation, their optics at risk. And frankly, that's all these bureaucrats care about. The White House took the threats seriously. Oh, it did? And supported the commanders taking action as they deemed fit. They said there was no micromanagement from Washington of the effort to try to prevent this attack. In other words, it's not our fault. We had nothing. I know nothing about this. Had nothing to do with this. We told these guys, do whatever you want, sure. I'm not telling you what to do. Except they already did. They already put constraints on them. Leaders had already discussed with the Taliban additional security measures outside of the gates. And yet, you know, it didn't happen. And of course, it was the Taliban who was taking charge of security at the gate. As the Washington Examiner puts it in their headline, the nation abandons Biden on Afghanistan and fears that more than 500 people will be left behind. That's why they came back. This is an expectations game. They tell you that it's going to be, oh, thousands. Then they say, no, 500. And now they say, it's only 250. That's obscene that it would be 250. So, his mistakes leaving hundreds behind. The shocking moment, the Taliban militants storm a Kabul TV station. It's amazing. Pull up this picture, Travis, of this guy. He's got Taliban to the left of him. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with these guys here. I'll never complain about Alex crashing my show again. He never came in with guns pointed at my head. But it was distracting enough. But I can imagine what this guy doing. And show the picture. Scroll down a little bit. There's a picture of, keep going, of a bunch. There it is, right there. That's the entire entourage of guests that just appeared on his show. See the difference between that? He's got like eight people there. So the difference between that and what's happening on CNN is that you don't see the CIA, and unless they, you know, put Brennan or Clapper or Hayden or some of these other people, put them on as on-air commentators. Always in the past, though, that is a perfect metaphor of all those soldiers standing, you know, these guys with guns and everything standing around him. That's a perfect metaphor of how the CIA and the intelligence community has intimidated the press for all these years. It's a carrot and a stick thing. You do what we tell you to do, we'll give you some money. But you know what? We have ways of killing people who don't do what we tell them to do. Yeah, that's the reality. When you look at Brian Stelter or Anderson Cooper or you know Fox News, most of these guys, Fox News, that's the implied situation there. You got the corporate sponsors, the intelligence community sponsors, the military-industrial complex, the people selling the vaccines. They're all kind of standing around there just to remind you what to say. So the presenter talks about the collapse of the government and the previous government, the corrupt government that was our ally. And it says that the Islamic Emirate, that's the new name, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, says that the Afghan people should not be afraid. He says that with fear and trembling. So, yeah, they come in peace. They come in peace. Maybe, you know, though, at the beginning of this, when you're seeing all these pictures of them doing silly stuff like riding bumper cars and merry-go-rounds and dancing, you know, doing the AR, or I guess it was an AK-47, doing that particular dance move that they had. You know, they were saying, oh, look, I think they got some PR people working for them. Well, I think maybe the PR person's been beheaded at this point because if you're going to break into a newsroom, surround the guy with armed terrorists, and just so that he can tell everybody that the Islamic Emirate says there's nothing to be afraid of. Reassuring, isn't it? It's about as reassuring as the pronouncements about the vaccine and the pandemic. And whatever else Fauci has to say to us. During the 42-second clip, it seems that the news presenter was being stared down by two militants standing on either side of him. And by the way, when you look at the video of this, the one guy, talking about being stared down, one guy, his eyes are going in different directions. I mean, he looks like Marty Feldman, that guy right there. When you look at the video, he's kind of like Marty Feldman from Young Frankenstein, you know, what hump? So anyway. Are things any better here in the U.S., really? When we look at what is happening, Obama's former education secretary says that anti-mask and anti-vax people are just like the suicide bombers at Kabul's airport. How many times do we have to have government officials compare us to terrorists? And how many different ways and how many different times before we start to understand that these people have already declared war on us? Every day, there's a new pronouncement of these people calling us terrorists. Anybody with half a brain knew this nonsense about 9/11, three buildings collapsing in their footprint just a couple of hours after planes hit them, and only two of the buildings hit by airplanes, and 20 minutes before that third building that wasn't hit by a plane came down. The BBC announced that it had already fallen 20 minutes ahead of time with the building over the reporter's shoulder. Other people saying Silverstein, who owned the building, said, pull it. People heard explosions. You know, you have Spike Lee is going to be doing a 9/11 documentary. I don't know. It would be interesting to see what he has to say about it. I don't know what happened. I do know what did not happen. The conspiracy theory that it was done by a bunch of men out of caves is absolute garbage. I mean, we just had another massive fire that burned a steel skyscraper all the way down to its frame. And it wasn't even leaning at the end of it. There was nothing left but the frame. It wasn't even leaning. This is what the Obama Education Secretary said, former Education Secretary, Duncan. Said, have you noticed how strikingly similar both the mindsets and the actions are between the suicide bombers at Kabul's airport and the anti-mask, anti-vax people here? He tweeted this out. He said they both blow themselves up. Well, no, we don't. We're not committing suicide, and we're not killing other people. Both of them inflict harm on those around them. No, we're not mandating any toxic genetic code injections on anybody. And they're convinced that they're fighting for freedom. Again, how many different ways do they have to tell you that they're the enemy? You know, this whole war against us began, as wars always do, I pointed out many times, with economic sanctions. The lockdowns, the destruction of small businesses on Main Street, of the middle class, the incarceration of people all over the world. Every government has gone to war with its own people. And all of these wars in every one of these countries began with economic sanctions because that's the way they always run. That's what a siege looks like in the 21st century. Economic sanctions. Shutting down the economy. Starving people out. It's just a variation on when they used to surround the city castle, the city state, and put a barricade on there to starve people out before the actual hot war began. A Biden drone strike has reportedly killed multiple children in Kabul. The family claims that they are not ISIS. Family denies being ISIS, says six children died. International relations and security expert, former senior presenter for Political News, has interviewed the family of the deceased, who says nine individuals, including six children, were killed, not ISIS. They said they shared these photos with me. They're originally from Panj Sher. He said, it was a rocket attack. Six members of our family, including my sister, killed. We are not ISIS. We're ordinary people, he said, while he cried. So this is, you know, we're winning the hearts and minds of the people all the way up to the very last day, aren't we? According to a U.S. defense official, multiple suicide bombers inside a vehicle were struck by a drone. Significant explosives in vehicle led to a secondary explosion. They said the bombers belonged to ISIS and were en route to the Kabul airport. However, other sources, including AP, note that the rocket struck an Afghan neighborhood, killing a child. So the way the U.S. military is trying to reconcile this, I don't know which is what's true. They say the rocket attack was a separate incident from the drone attack. So they're saying we had two attacks to resolve these conflicting stories. But then the Babylon Bee, in their satire piece, says Biden drone strikes the White House after vowing to kill those responsible for the American military deaths in Kabul. Quote, we will not rest until those responsible for this senseless, avoidable crisis in Kabul have been removed from the earth, said a forceful Biden. We will unleash everything within our military's arsenal to stop those who allowed this to happen. Unbeknownst to Biden, at that very moment, a U.S. military drone was activated and given the White House as its target. Yeah, it must have been artificial intelligence, these autonomous killer drones. General Milley said, I'm sorry, but unfortunately, he said to kill those responsible. The drones are quite literal, sir. There's nothing we can do. We'll be right back.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation.
They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and we're going to be joined by Eric Peters at the top of the hour. It's going to be an interesting discussion. Lots to talk to Eric about mobility, about freedom, and, of course, about the antithesis of all of that, which is what's been happening to us over the last year. Before we bring Eric on, I want to talk a little bit about the toxic medicines that are being pushed on us. I've had several listeners send me things about ivermectin, and also I'll begin with this one. This is a listener who says, according to the lab, the COVID patients are having to get blood plasma. They said it's supposedly hitting A+ mostly, or type A blood. So that blood type is getting hit the worst with blood shortages, exacerbated by no one wanting to get out and to donate. Now, he says that this is blood types that are hit by COVID. I don't know if it's COVID, if it's a vaccine, if it's maybe the vaccine is the protein spikes are affecting one type of blood more than another. I don't know, but that's something we'll be looking for. I'm just passing the information on. It's not verified. That's just someone who has sent that in as a comment. And then we have a doctor in Arkansas who is under investigation for curing COVID. That's right. This is where we are right now with these toxic medicines. 531 cases of COVID. Not a single person died. The doctor had been prescribing ivermectin the entire time, and so now he's being investigated. This is just like these large churches that meet or small churches that meet. Nobody's dying. Got to shut them down because it makes them look bad. It makes their lockdown look bad. It makes their pandemic look bad. It makes their vaccines look bad. If you got somebody who's sick. So he's had 531 people who had tested positive for COVID, had symptoms, some of them, cured them all. So the ACLU was very upset about that. They said no one, including incarcerated individuals, should be subject to medical experimentation, said the ACLU of Arkansas. And the listener who sent this to me, Nicholas, thank you, Nicholas, said, what about the experimental vaccines? What about that? See, we're all prisoners. And yet, as I've always seen my entire life, the ACLU never focuses on the principles. They focus on their agenda. They say they're about civil liberty, and they're not about civil liberty. If they were about civil liberty, they'd be fighting to get us all released from a preemptive imprisonment. But they don't care about that. Instead, they want to come after somebody who cured people. And they don't care about us being compelled. Compelled. How do you justify this as a libertarian, as a civil liberties organization? By the way, I had so many of these people who were wishing me, giving me death wishes on Sunday because I had the audacity to criticize Mitt Romney for saying that his fantasies about his health trump my actual liberty. Your liberty gets in the way of my health. I said, oh, really? And so many of the people who attacked me said, you libertarians, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I got to say, what they don't realize is that the libertarians are with this. Libertarians like Reason, like Cato, the other self-described libertarians like the ACLU, they're down with the government telling you everything to do. They're down with corporations telling you what to do. They like that. They're fully on board with that. As a matter of fact, the libertarians are saying, what's taking the FDA so long? They should just sweep this thing away and let everybody have it right off the bat. That's not my position. That's why I call myself libertarian. I think libertarians have lost their way a long time ago. This is from another listener. And he says, looks like Walmart pharmacies are about to start cracking down on prescriptions for ivermectin. As a pharmacist, I'm being instructed to reach out, quote, reach out to the prescriber to have a clinical discussion to receive a, if I receive a prescription for ivermectin for the prevention or treatment of COVID-19, since the FDA has not approved ivermectin for use in treating or preventing COVID-19 in humans. The WHO only recommends the use of ivermectin to treat patients with COVID-19 within clinical trials, unquote. And so this is what Walmart is sending out to their pharmacists. And I guess, you know, when you have to reach out to the prescriber to have a clinical discussion, you're supposed to reach out to the doctor to intimidate them. I've noticed here, doctor, that you prescribe something that the World Health Organization, owned by Bill Gates, does not want you to prescribe. What are you doing this for? He said the communication concludes with links to the FDA, to the CDC, and to the WHO resources, which support the stance that Walmart is taking with regard to discouraging the use of ivermectin. They said it is obvious that the expectation, he says, it is obvious that the expectation is for the pharmacist to discourage, to possibly outright deny filling prescriptions for ivermectin or for any other therapies that are, quote, prescribed off-label. And understand what this is, because this is a key thing. You know, all of the phony information that is coming out of the FDA saying, this is for horses, don't eat the horse stuff, and all of the jokes that you see on the internet, everybody's picked up on. This has now, you know, become an echo chamber. The FDA said, seriously, don't take horse medicine, don't take the goo. Well, nobody wants to take that goo. They're only taking the goo because you have cut off access to the pills. Or more accurately, Merck is cutting off access to the pills. Merck, which Bill Gates has a big investment in, by the way. And so this is a drug that has been approved by the FDA. As a matter of fact, unlike these experimental vaccines, it has decades of use by humans, so we know what the adverse effects are. And they're not very serious. Even the people who are out there trying to scare you, saying, look, we've got people out there getting horse goo, and they're taking it in too high a doses. And, of course, what's the difference between a medicine and a poison? The dosage, of course. You can turn anything into poison with a high enough dosage. As a matter of fact, you can kill people with too much water. I don't know if you remember, but there was a woman who died. It was something that's a stunt that was being done by a radio station. And or TV station. And they had all these people, and they were giving them water, giving them questions, or having them do something, or but not letting them go to the bathroom as a joke. And one lady, because you know, smaller body than the other people, one lady had drunk so much water that it diluted her blood enough that it killed her. She died from drinking too much. Well, you can die from overdosing on anything. So if you're going to have anybody that gets sick with this stuff, and did you notice that there hasn't been a single report of anybody dying? Do you think that if somebody died from taking ivermectin, you know, of course, that it'd be headline news at the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. It would be at the top of Drudge Report with a red flashing siren. So you know that not a single person has died from ivermectin, unlike the vaccines, which they just look the other way. If there's a single person that ever dies that they can tie this to ivermectin, oh, it will be international news for everybody. But it hasn't happened. And when we talk about something being prescribed off-label, the position that the FDA has taken is that they approve a drug, and they approve it for one specific use, or a couple of, you know, at a time. And you're not allowed to use it for anything else, even though you know what the adverse effects are. You're not allowed to use it for something else. Even if it's not dangerous, you're not allowed to use it for something else. And that's the basis of this, a big part of this prohibition. So, prescribed off-label. They're going to state that these therapies must be evaluated using clinical judgment regarding clinical appropriateness and safety. Then all we have to do is just wait for these pharmaceutical companies that are making money hand over fist to fund a study for something that costs nothing. So after hell freezes over, you'll be able to see those studies. A Japanese medical chairman has doubled down on ivermectin support after early calls went ignored. This is from LifeSite News. In February, the chairman of the Tokyo Medical Association, Haru Ozaki, called on Japanese doctors to implement ivermectin as an effective medication to combat COVID-19. About the usage of the antiparasitic for COVID, given the international hesitancy to use it as medication for COVID, he said, quote, "We cannot say that ivermectin is absolutely not effective, at least not me." He said, "I am aware that there are many papers that ivermectin is effective in the prevention and treatment, mainly in Central and South America and Asia, where they have done this." And of course, as I said, it's been approved for human use. Merck, which manufactured it, has sold more than a billion doses of it for human use before all of this began with COVID. But the big deal with it is not that it's being used off-label. The big deal with it is that it's being used off-patent. The patent has expired. It's all about the money. It's about the profits. He also cited a paper examining the preventative effects of ivermectin regarding coronavirus infections in India. And there's been many, many of these. And I've shown you, again, a French epidemiologist who went country after country, region after region, Europe, Asia, Central and South America, and showed in all of these different countries how effective ivermectin was, taking all these sicknesses down to zero. And then when they started vaccinations, or they stopped ivermectin, but in most cases it was tied to the beginning of vaccinations, the cases just went straight up, straight up. Participants who took ivermectin prophylaxis had a lower risk of getting symptoms suggesting a SARS-CoV-2 infection. The Indian study showed 3,532 healthcare workers. According to the study, those who had taken two doses of oral ivermectin have a significantly lower risk of contracting COVID disease during the following month. Two doses of oral ivermectin, 300 micrograms per kilogram of weight, given 72 hours apart as a chemoprophylaxis among HCWs, reduces the risk of infection by 83% the following month. So going back to Japan, the chairman of what is essentially their FDA, Ozaki, said that that despite evidence suggesting the efficacy of ivermectin, it is difficult to obtain the medication. He added that while ivermectin's established effectiveness is increasingly clear, the U.S. company that manufactures the drug, Merck, have a currently limited distribution because they claim the drug is ineffective at treating COVID. According to Ozaki, he said, even if a doctor writes a prescription, there's no drug in the pharmacy. They're cutting off the supply. He says the fact that the supply has been stopped by Merck is evidence that it does, in fact, work. He said, Merck says ivermectin doesn't work, so there shouldn't be any need to limit supply. If it doesn't work, there's no demand. I believe it works, so you're blocking the supply. It looks like you're blocking the supply. How is it that, you know, we can't figure this out in America, and they can in Japan? Supply and demand. And if people look at this stuff and it doesn't work, we can figure that out. And if people do a study, you know, like you had Zelenko at the beginning of this, the doctor in a small Jewish town, he knew it was a small town, he knew his patients, so he's like, well, let me read this and try something that I think is going to work. And he put together a protocol. He treated over 1,000 people. And he said, at the very beginning of this, symptoms, I'd start this, nobody had to go to the hospital, we didn't fill up any hospitals, any of that stuff. Why is it that we're not allowed to look at things that work? It's because of money. Here's what RFK Jr. Had to say about the connection between Gates and Fauci. And he's talking to Wolf here in her podcast.
I mean, that's what we've been talking about from the beginning. This Gates has these incestuous relationships with Anthony Fauci that go back 20 years, where he's, you know, paying Fauci, and they have all kinds of really corrupt financial entanglements with each other. They, you know, he brought Fauci to his house in 2000, and his $189 million house in Seattle, brought him into the den, sat him down and said, I want to have a partnership with you.
Whoa.
The way that Fauci explains it is that Fauci would develop the drugs.
This kind of government knows how to help business, to encourage it.
Pass them on to the drug companies, to Merck, Sanofi, Gilead, Johnson & Johnson. Gates would then guarantee markets in Africa through his control of WHO.
Wow.
We have now what we have always needed, real partnership with the government.
Because he controls WHO, he controls those companies, those countries, because WHO pays for their health ministries and supplies all their HIV medications, and they have to do what WHO tells them to do. So he can require those countries to buy the vaccines from these companies, and he then is invested in the companies, in Merck, he owns, you know, and by the way, Gates has no pretension that he gives a crap about public health. His other investments are in tobacco companies, in processed foods, in Coca-Cola, in Cargill, in Monsanto, in Philip Morris, in Kraft, you know, cheese, and then all the oil companies, which he owns stakes in virtually all of them. So he's not a guy who cares about climate or who cares about public health. He's a guy who cares about control.
Yeah, you know, they make climate, they make the oil companies the big villains, but of course, and Gates is using that to make sure that everybody's going to have to buy their meat from him. Actually, it won't be meat. It'll be plants. And he says, even plants, we don't want to have that because it uses too much energy to grow plants. So we'll come up with something synthetic that you have to buy from me, that type of thing. Yeah, it's simply about the money, isn't it? Simply about the money.
Show me the money!
Yeah, you know.
Show me the money!
Yeah, well, I think we just saw the money there. I think RFK Jr. did a great job of laying that out there with Naomi Wolf. And, of course, I interspersed some shots there from The Godfather Part Two, where Michael Corleone is there with Hyman Roth. You can just imagine, as he's talking about how they're going to pass these profits around, you can imagine Hyman Roth cutting the cake and handing it out for this person and that person. Here's a piece of the pie for each and every one of you. And as RFK Jr. pointed out, Bill Gates was going to be creating markets. Why? Because he had leverage over the WHO, and he also has leverage over all of these individual companies as well. Why is the Gates Foundation funding the UK's medicines regulator? It's not just third world countries that he's bought control in. It's places like the US, the UK, and every other country on Earth. He is the biggest contributor now to the WHO. Bill Gates says, more than any country, he gives them money. This is an article from NakedCapitalism.com on Zero Hedge. Just as importantly, why is the regulator laying off 20% of its workforce in the midst of a global pandemic? On August the 13th, the UK government published a response to a Freedom of Information request in relation to the Medicine Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, the UK's equivalent of the FDA. It was in response to a question asking whether or not the agency had received funding from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The answer was yes. See, we have a partnership here with the mafia and with business, right? This is a government that knows how to do business with very rich and powerful men. And he owns them. He owns them. They said, yes, we do receive funding, the UK does, from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as well as other sources outside the government, such as the WHO, which, by the way, is also predominantly funded by Bill Gates, the biggest contributor to them. This funding mainly supports work to strengthen regulatory systems in other countries, forcing you to take their stuff and keeping things like ivermectin away from you. That's the purpose of these regulatory... This is nothing but organized crime, folks. These people are mafia figures. Bill Gates, the intelligence community that he works with, DARPA, and these other, they're nothing but criminals. The current level of grant funding received from the Gates Foundation amounts to approximately $3 million just for the UK. They need that money. And you've got, just imagine if he's got this kind of influence with the UK, what kind of influence he has with third world countries. This covers a number of projects, and the funding is spread across 3 to 4 financial years, and we are an executive agency of the Department of Health and Social Care. The Gates Foundation's roughly $60 billion in assets include, among many other things, shares and other forms of investments in some of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies. Companies such as Sanofi, Merck, who is shutting down the supply of ivermectin. They don't have the patent on it anymore. Other companies can do it, but they're shutting down and creating supply issues. Eli Lilly, let's see, where was it that Trump's HHS Secretary Alex Azar came from? Oh, yeah, it's Eli Lilly as well. Abbott Labs, the people that Trump was pushing out there with a shot. You understand how they've completely taken over our government as well to push out these Trump shots sent around the world. All of these have developed or are developing COVID treatments or vaccines that have yet to receive authorization in the UK. So he buys his way in, just like Hyman Roth bought his way into the corrupt Batista regime in Cuba. It's also worth noting that the former CEO of MHRA now works as a senior advisor at the Gates Foundation. The Gates Foundation is anything but a disinterested third party. And just as RFK Jr. pointed out, Bill Gates himself and the Gates Foundation is not a philanthropic organization. It is about control and about becoming more wealthy. How much is enough? Always just a little bit more, as Rockefeller said. Bill Gates is committed as ever to intellectual property rights. He played a big role in getting Oxford University to drop a prior commitment to donate any rights to its vaccine to a drug maker. That's why it's called AstraZeneca. And if we look at the latest thing coming out in terms of vaccination status, the World Health Organization, primary funder Bill Gates, has just released a guiding document for a digital vaccine certificate that will be blockchain-based. This will be used to implement a vaccine passport in every country worldwide. It is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and by the Rockefeller Foundation. Rockefeller Foundation, the first one to get in and to corrupt our health and medicine and the medical community. But now the leader has become Bill Gates himself. The vaccine passport, the coercion. Understand, you know, he had the ID 2020. Everyone everywhere has to get a global ID. That was not the motto, but the motto of Immunization Agenda 2030 is everyone everywhere, every age. Every vaccine, really. But getting back to Pfizer, the FDA and bribes aplenty. This is from TrustTheEQ.com. And they say that it is a Pfizer executive that gave them this information. You want to talk about the private meeting between Bill Gates and Fauci? Just like the meeting between Michael Corleone and Hyman Roth. Pfizer, the FDA, and bribes aplenty. This goes back to May, actually. This is sent to us by a listener. On December 28th, 2019, just as news of the Wuhan virus sank its teeth into American society, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla confronted then FDA Director Stephen Hahn with what he described as an intractable dilemma. Bourla lamented Pfizer's, quote, revenue loss. They said that's a curious word for a pharmaceutical manufacturer that netted not gross sales, but netted $16.7 billion in 2019, of which Borla, the CEO, earned $17 million in 2019 and $22 million in 2020. By the way, I imagine it's a lot more than that now. You had 9 new billionaires created by these Operation Warp Speed Trump shots. 9 new billionaires. And I'd be very surprised, since the CEO of Moderna and many others are among those newly minted billionaires, if that doesn't apply to this CEO of Pfizer as well. So, Han Borla and a gaggle of FDA and Pfizer officials met in private talks. What is interesting is that it didn't happen at the FDA's big complex in Silver Springs, Maryland. And it didn't happen at the Pfizer's corporate headquarters in Manhattan. Instead, the official talks happened not in a boardroom, but in a suite at the Hay Adams Hotel in Washington, D.C. Borla had requested a clandestine gathering, having told the FDA's Han that trade secrets would be analyzed and that Pfizer's codified agreement with the FDA stipulated that Pfizer had authority to request covert discussions. You realize this? They've got a contract with the FDA telling the FDA that, hey, if we want to have a private conversation, we're going to have this outside of our offices and outside of your offices. They own these people. It's called regulatory capture. It's called corruption. It's called bribes. So Borla divulged no trade secrets. Instead, he bitched about how Pfizer had, over the last decade, missed out on, quote, potentially billions of dollars as many of its lucrative drugs lost their patent protection and became available generically, you know, like ivermectin. He claimed to have come into possession of the genome sequence. Now, remember, this is December the 28th. He says, hey, I've got the sequence of the Wuhan virus. Nothing to see there, right? Nothing suspicious about that. In describing the virus, Borla, CEO of Pfizer, said it appears to be no more lethal than seasonal influenza. It seems to be airborne and spreads rapidly among the infected population. The symptoms may appear to be perilous, but based on our analysis, the average person has a 99.6% chance of full recovery. Borla put forward an agenda. If the FDA approved Pfizer's vaccine, which was already in the works, Pfizer would kick back 15% of profit over the next 36 months. He said, you can use that money to disperse research grants or for whatever you want. Truth be told, we probably don't need a vaccine for this, but it's important that you impress upon your peers, the CDC, and people like Anthony Fauci, that a vaccine is necessary to ensure survival of the American people. In response, Han at the FDA made a startling confession. One of Pfizer's competitors had already pitched a similar plan to the FDA. Without naming the competitor, which we know is Moderna, their competitor, Han said emergency use authorization would have to be shared among reputable vaccine manufacturers. Factoring, quote, factoring in global distribution earnings, I'd agree, we all stand to profit. You can trickle out emergency use authorizations, but it's important to us that we obtain full approval first. Leaving it up to you and your people to determine when that happens, said Borla, and we'll make sure that we provide greater incentive than any other competitors. This information in this article, they said, came from a former Pfizer executive. Now, it's anonymous. I don't know this source. But let me tell you, this rings true. We had, and I reported this many times, it was reported by Stat News, which is a pharmaceutical trade publication, big supporters of all things vaccine and pharmaceutical. It was reported by them based on documents that they'd received from the Argentine and Brazilian governments, as well as a third country that wanted to remain anonymous because they'd signed an NDA. And they were saying that Pfizer was going around shaking people down and saying, we want to be protected not only from developing this thing out here, but also from any defects in manufacturing. And we want to be protected from criminal charges. And we want you to keep money in offshore bank accounts. And we want you to put up as collateral sovereign real estate. Now, since that happened, we've had two more countries that have come out and talked about how Pfizer shook them down and blackmailed them like a mafia country. We also know that they made a deal with Israel. Israel sold their population as lab rats. said, you give us the Pfizer vaccine first, and we'll give you 2 years' worth of information as we run this experiment out, because 2 years is about what they would typically do with a drug trial. 3 years, somewhere in that area. You don't know with a vaccine whether it's safe or effective, because you don't do a challenge test. You don't give people a shot for the condition that's supposed to prevent. It doesn't cure anything. Vaccines are supposed to be a preventative. And so you don't give people a treatment and then have a control group that you don't give the treatment to and then expose both of them to a pathogen. That's Nazi science. That's prohibited by international agreement. That's prohibited by the Nuremberg Code. And so instead what they do is they run a long-term epidemiological study. They have a control group and they have the people that they gave the thing, and then they just watch them for 2 years to see if, you know, if they develop any health conditions, to see if this works by seeing the rate of disease in the two different populations. And they didn't do that with this. A big short-term test is not a long-term test. And not only that, but they short-circuited anything by giving the control group after a month or so, say, hey, you know, we gave you the placebo. It's supposed to be a double-blind study. We gave you the placebo, and would you like to have the vaccine? Now, a lot of them took the vaccine, but whether they took the vaccine or not, they have blown the whole prospect of a control group of an actual study. The thing is fraudulent from the get-go, just like our Afghan war. We'll be right back with Eric Peters. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please.
That I was
looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
All right, and joining us now is Eric Peters of EPAutos.com. Always a pleasure to talk to Eric, and we haven't talked for a while, and there's so much to talk about on his site, again, epautos.com, and it is supported by volunteer contributions just like this show. So make sure you go there, check out the stuff, and if you want to keep the information coming about liberty, about mobility, about real car reviews, and we're going to talk about some real car reviews, but we're going to start by talking about climate change, because they're circling back to that, and that's, you know, that was always the agenda. They pulled out a different panic for last year. They move that agenda along quite a bit. It doesn't matter what the justification is. As long as they can strike fear into the heart of the general public, they can move on with their agenda. So now, after that's rolled on for a while, they're going to be bringing back climate change. And you've got an article, Who Killed the Electric Car? I had so many people used to send this to me years ago, that Michael Moore film, Who Killed the Electric Car? Yep. Well, who killed it? Eric, thank you for joining us.
Well, the free market did. By the way, don't you just love these invisible boogeymen, whether it's the climate change or a sickness that doesn't kill 99% of us? But leaving that aside for the moment, Moore's film was about a car called the EV1, and it was one of the very first electric cars that came onto the market, and this was back in the mid-90s, and I test drove them. I'm one of the few journalists who's still working who can tell you that he's had seat time in the thing.
So what was it like?
And it failed for the same reason that electric cars continue to fail today. They cost too much, and they cost you too much time in terms of having to plan and orient your entire life around the electrical umbilical cord and worrying about, well, am I going to run out of juice and where am I going to plug in and how long am I going to have to wait? That's what killed the car. It wasn't that GM nefariously was trying to prevent people from buying it. Most people simply don't want to pay more to get less, which is what you get with the EV1 and almost all of the electric cars that are on the market today.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the old turbine cars that Chrysler had. I mean, they had the turbine cars just like the Batmobile on the TV series.
Sure.
And they were pretty cool, except they were unbelievably expensive. They're about five times the cost of a regular car.
Potentially, those could have worked. The main difficulty, as I understand it, with the turbine car was that it took a little while for the thing to spool up in order for you to get going, just like a jet airplane.
Yeah.
And potentially, they could have hammered that out. You know, the upside to a turbine-powered car is that just like a jet airplane, it can burn practically, you know, kerosene, diesel, you know, very easy-to-refine fuel that is readily available. So on that count, it could have worked very well. Now, we should talk about the electric car that did work, and that was killed as a result of an incredibly inept marketing job, and which
Before you go to that, though, I mean, when you look at the Michael Moore film, you know, Who Killed the Electric Car? It was very conspiratorial. You know, we had the evil automobile industry, we had the evil oil industry. They conspired to get rid of this thing that was a solution to all of mankind's woes, right? And yet, of course, Michael Moore and his ilk, it's amazing to me how they've become big corporate cheerleaders with the vaccines, you know?
Censorship
of speech.
Master.
That's right.
They serve the same master, you know, ultimately. And, you know, if you dig into it a little bit, this becomes quite clear. Now, the car that we want to talk about is the Chevrolet Volt that GM actually produced up until recently. 2019 was the last year. And the genius of this thing was that it operated on the same principle that a diesel-electric locomotive operates on, in that it was what's called a series hybrid. You had a combustion engine, in this case a gas engine, on board, but it didn't propel the car. What it did was to click on and serve as a generator to keep the battery topped off so that you didn't have to stop. Now, the car's all-electric range was about 50 miles, which encompasses most people's daily drive without any difficulty. And if not, no big deal, because the gas engine would kick on and it would power up the battery and keep you going for as long as you wanted to go, including for several hundred miles. And then there was a related aspect to this, which is really interesting. The battery would never completely discharge because of the fact that it carried around its own onboard generator. So it wasn't worn out by these heavy discharge, recharge cycles, which anybody who knows anything about batteries knows inevitably reduces the service life of a battery. Now, with an electric car, you've got that problem, and then you've got the problem of, well, how do I get back on the road quickly? Then you bring out these so-called fast chargers that create an inherent fire hazard by trying to force feed all of this high voltage electricity back into the battery pack at an extremely rapid rate, which tends to cause overheating and thermal runaway and fires. You didn't have these issues with the Volt. The Volt was also pretty affordable. It was only slightly more than a conventional hybrid. And so people could afford to buy this thing. It made sense on economic grounds. It made sense on environmental grounds. It made sense all around. But it never got any love. And the reason for that is, it's got a gas engine. It didn't matter that it burned hardly any gas. People who own these cars will tell you they have to put fuel stabilizer in the tank because a tank will last them 2 or 3 months. So, you know, it didn't emit any meaningful amount of gas. You know, gas is the dreaded carbon dioxide. So it would negligibly affect the climate changing, even if you buy into anthropomorphic climate change. So it was a perfect solution, and that was the problem. It actually worked.
Well, you know,
we can't have that.
We keep seeing how they're killing all internal combustion engines, even the scheme like you're talking about, where it's just used as an occasional generator. They're being phased out in these ultra-low emission zones in Europe. You know, they go through a phase. First, they ban the diesel, then they ban the gasoline car, then they ban the hybrid. They want to go only to battery-operated electric cars. Let me ask you, the Toyota hybrids, do they have an engine that directly drives the car rather than just using it as a generator? Like the Prius?
Both, and all of the other hybrids that are on the road, the gas engine is actually connected to a transmission and directly drives the vehicle. So the gas engine is not primarily there as a generator as it was in the Volt. And by the way, there's another aspect to this. You don't need this whole new parallel redundant infrastructure of so-called fast charging rigs when you have series hybrids like the Volt. You don't have to do any of that. So you eliminate the how many billions or trillions of dollars are they going to waste on something like that when you've got this vehicle that can just be put a couple of gallons of gas in this thing? It had a 9-gallon tank. 9-gallon tank would probably last you a month, 2 months. An amazingly impressive car. And by the way, Volkswagen was working on a very similar concept using a diesel engine, and they were talking about 200 miles per gallon average when the diesel was running, and electric range of 100 miles or more.
Wow.
But of course, again, we can't have that because it works.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. These engineers, especially the ones in Japan, are going out and coming up with workable solutions. They come in and say, you know what we're worried about? We're worried about emissions. Well, we can fix that. Worried about fuel economy. We can fix that. And then they come up with a solution and they ban it because that's not really what they want. You know, when you look at what we've just had here, you know, we've been scared that the world is going to end because of freezing. We were told it was going to end because of warming. And then we're told it was just going to end because of climate change, and it's going to end because of the pandemic. And now they're back with the so-called climate change. We know that none of this stuff is really what they're concerned about. What they're concerned about is just exercising control over us.
Absolutely. You notice the common thread, too, common denominator. You can look over at the whole thing that's going on with the Rona and its variants, which sounds like a punk rock band. But, you know, there are readily available, very affordable treatments for people if they get sick enough to need the treatment. That's all available. These vaccines are simply not necessary from a medical point of view. The masks are not necessary. From a medical point of view, that, you know, as I was joking about a little bit when we began the interview, the best thing that you can do to avoid getting sick is to drop a few pounds if you're heavy. You know,
don't be
obese and don't eat bad food. Take care of yourself, and the odds are you won't even get sick.
Well, we know that there's something up when they're banning, and I talked a great deal in the last half hour about how they're trying to shut down ivermectin, even Merck, which is still manufacturing it, but it's out of patent, so they're not making a lot of money. But they're restricting the flow of it. You have Walmart threatening, giving out, telling their pharmacies, you need to engage with the person who prescribed this and tell them this isn't FDA approved and so forth. They're coming right up to the point where it'll be banned, but the equivalent of the FDA in Japan is wringing their hands over the fact that they can't even get the supply, you know, because it's being artificially restricted. So we know where that is. But getting back to the agenda with the electric cars, I remember over a decade ago, I remember about the first time I heard of battery fires that burned down houses, and it happened a couple of times just in North Carolina where Nissan Leafs doing that. And now we've just had a major recall of a different GM,
Chevy Volts.
Yeah, the Chevy Volt.
60,000 of them.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, they're bringing those back for, what, about $1 billion or something? They're going to take a loss on that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Amazing.
And what's not being discussed, and which people, I think, should understand, particularly if they're thinking about buying an electric car, is that this is a built-in inherent hazard with pure electric cars by dint of the nature of the charging apparatus, and particularly with regard to the fast charging. So, you know, if you don't want the hassle and the inconvenience of hooking it up to a 120-volt household outlet and waiting overnight, if you want to be able to get on the road again faster, and you're going to hook it up to one of these fast charging systems, that's where these things tend to catch fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's any defect within the body of the cells, and a typical electric car has hundreds, if not thousands, of individual cells, any manufacturing defect, any crack, any problem, any dendrites that form, this is what causes the thermal runaway and fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear, it's objective, it's not in dispute. Everybody who knows anything about the engineering and the way batteries are put together will tell you this is true. And they're not talking about it, which I think is extraordinarily interesting, because this is a legitimate, real public safety hazard. And if there were anything similar with regard to non-electric cars, if you had a vehicle out there that had an inherent design defect that resulted in it potentially catching fire, like the Pinto, for example, there would be a massive recall. They would have pulled these things off the road. And by the way, the Pinto, they made, I think, 3.2 million Pintos, and the number of Pintos that actually caught fire was incredibly small relative to the production, whereas the number of electric cars that have caught fire relative to the number of electric cars on the road, which is small, is pretty huge, and it's going to increase as more electric cars get forced down the gullets of Americans, like the pellets they stuff down the throat of a pâté de foie gras goose.
That's exactly. Our goose is cooked with this stuff, isn't it? I've talked about that many times in terms of the Boeing 737 MAX. You had two crashes. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many flights they had the period of time where they were doing it, but you had two crashes and they shut it down. And so, you know, we look at the number of people that died in those two crashes. It's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the reported number of deaths from these vaccines, but they just keep going. I said, do you think
keep
with
going.
over 13 7,000 reported deaths just in America alone, not counting Europe, not counting the UK. Do you think, and it's only half of Europe that they're keeping data on, do you think that you might have at least as many as they had there? But it doesn't matter about the planes. It doesn't matter about anything, because if they've got an agenda to get rid of the internal combustion engine, to get rid of your freedom, to get to alter society, they're going to go with it, and safety doesn't have anything to do with it.
Without question. You know, you see this dissonance, this disparity of attitude towards something, if it serves the agenda or it doesn't serve the agenda. There's all sorts of ululations about child safety, for example. Every kid has to be strapped into a safety seat because there's this, you know, very small chance that there might be an accident and you might result in the kid being hurt if the kid's not strapped into a safety seat. But hey, shoot them up with an experimental vaccine that is known, you know, to potentially cause crippling, if not killing, side effects. And that's somehow okay. Don't worry.
That's right.
About
yeah.
that.
Well, you know, you and I spotted this fraud from the very beginning because of the car stuff. And also because I had been watching Fauci and the pharmaceutical industry trying to scare people into getting an annual flu shot. And so, mm-hmm. but you spotted it just based on, you know, the lies in and around automobiles. It was pretty obvious if you've been following government closely on it. And I really do like that article again, because I think the key point that you made in that is the fact that very, very efficient in terms of the use of the internal combustion engine, very, very mm-hmm. little emissions, very very little fuel used, and the batteries were always charged, so you don't have to worry about this fast charging, rapid charging thing, and the mm-hmm. batteries last longer because you're not cycling them through all the time. So that really was a solution, but of course, these people are absolutists about everything, aren't they, Matt? No internal combustion engine allowed in any way, shape, or form in any part of the design.
Well, and they're disingenuous absolutists, too. They won't come out and tell you that. They won't say, look, we're just going to take away your internal combustion engine because we don't like the fact that you have affordable, versatile mobility. They, you know, instead they try to shame and guilt you about how if you don't do this, we're going to have catastrophic climate change and your children are going to drown as sea levels rise.
Yeah.
You know, it's of a piece with granny's going to die if you don't put on a face diaper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, you've talked many times about the useless, expensive things that they're adding. And, of course, they're planning on making everybody buy a breathalyzer, even though you're not an alcoholic and haven't been convicted multiple times, which used to be the conviction.
Oh, it's been done. It's,
yeah.
it's part of the infrastructure bill
infrastructure.
That they passed. All
yeah.
the new cars are going to have this within, I think, 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. But it's another complex thing that the car companies can sell, and they'll get massive funding from the government to put that in place. But you had an article, How Government Saves You Money. We talk about something yep. that's a lot more subtle about that. Tell us a little yep. bit about that safety aspect and how the government is saving us money.
Well, that was inspired by just doing a brake job recently. And if anybody who's listening to this has done a brake job recently, they'll know that in addition to changing pads, sometimes you have to deal with damaged brake rotors. That's the disc that the pads clamp onto that provides the friction that slows the car down. And sometimes, as a result of the pads having worn out, you'll have ruts in the surface of the rotor, and that has to be trued. And what they did in the past was to take the rotors off and put them onto a special lathe that machined them down to create a true surface so that the thing wouldn't pulsate when you pushed on the brake pedal. Problem is now, in order to save weight, they use much thinner gauge material that has to be replaced rather than machined. And the reason for that is that the car companies are so desperate to figure out ways to shave a pound here, a pound there, in order to comply with these federal fuel economy mandates that the government presents to us as they're saving you money. You know, the law that they just passed, the regulation that they just issued, is going to increase car gas mileage by 2 or 3 or whatever it is. and people think about that and think, oh, that's wonderful, I'm going to save so much money at the pump. But what they don't realize is that they end up paying for things like new brake rotors rather than rotors that you could turn and machine for less. They don't realize that the gauge of the metal that's being used now for things like hoods and fenders is literally thinner than the flag that waves on the moon, and you can almost see it wave as you pick it up and, yeah. and hold it up with a little flimsy prop rod. You can literally, if you're a pretty strong man, you can bend it in half with your bare hands like Superman. And, yeah. you know, you and I can remember when exterior body panels were made of pretty sturdy heavy gauge metal, and you really had to hit the thing hard to cause any significant damage.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you get into like a 10 or 15 mile an hour fender bender, well, what used to be a fender bender, and it takes off the whole front clip of the car. Yeah. Now, who pays for that? You do, in the form of higher insurance bills, not just the repair costs. Because the insurance companies aren't dumb. They have actuaries, and they look into what it's going to cost to fix your car if you wreck it or somebody hits you, and that's why you pay more. The current Ford F-150 has an entirely aluminum body. That shaves, I think, about 600 pounds off the weight of the vehicle. And that's great unless you throw a heavy toolbox into the bed and dent it.
Yeah.
Or you back up into a tree and you crumple the tailgate. Aluminum is much harder to fix, and sometimes it can't be fixed, versus steel. And it requires a whole separate clean room in the body shop, and it requires special welding skills that a guy who just welds steel may not have. And, of course, that, too, is reflected in repair costs and insurance costs. And all these things cumulatively add up to a lot of money to save you on gas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's amazing as they make this all more expensive to own, expensive to buy, all these different regulatory issues. And, of course, again, you know, when we just talk about this breathalyzer thing, I just absolutely irritates me. I'm not in the market for a new car. You know, when I look at that and think about the fact that somebody like me that doesn't even drink will be compelled to have a breathalyzer in their car, it's just absolutely insane. Perfect example of a bloat, of corruption in our regulatory agencies. The only thing I can see about the lightweight rotors, of course, is it takes down your unsprung weight, which brings us to our next topic here, and that's the Miata that you had to evaluate. And you got a review of a Miata. You do car reviews of real cars that people can afford to buy. Tell us your impressions of my favorite type of car. I don't have I don't have the fourth generation Miata. I've got the third generation. It's about 12 years old, but I like it a lot, and I'm not even looking to upgrade it. I like it enough. So, but tell us about the new one and what you thought about it.
Well, sure. The Miata, it's one of those cars. Sometimes I feel like a guy who is out swimming in the open expanse of the Pacific Ocean, and every once in a while there's an island, and I swim for it, and I manage to crawl up on the beach and rest and take a breath before I have to start swimming again. And that's how I feel when I get a car like the Miata in between all of these homogenized transportation appliance crossovers that are proliferating, and they're all the same other than the badge and a few other things like whether the touch screen is 11 inches or 12 inches and stuff like that. But the Miata harkens back to the old Rush song, The Better Vanished Time, when cars were still fun.
Yeah.
And this is a very fun car, and more than that, it's a connected car. And I use that term very specifically because it's not connected in the modern sense, i.e. with all of this electronic second-guessing and peremptory parenting. You connect to the car physically.
That's right.
There is almost no electronic interference. You know, there's this wonderful 6-speed mechanical shifter that connects mechanically via the rods and levers to that transmission that's in the floor plan. You've got that brilliant engine up in front that you control, and you put this thing on like a suit, and you just go for a drive. And even the top, it's wonderful. There's no electronic motors. You know, if you want to take the top down, there's a catch up at the top of the windshield. You pull the catch down, you throw the top back. That's it.
And it's not like the convertible that I had when I met Karen. We were in college. I had a Triumph Spitfire. Now that was an adventure of rugged at the edge because it was not made that well. It wasn't very reliable, unlike the Miata. And the top, you could throw the top down, but boy, if you tried to put it back up, it was an exercise and snaps that were going to break, and you had to stretch them and all the rest of the stuff. Whereas the Miata, you just throw the thing back and pull it back up. It's great.
Those old Triumphs and MGs and all of those British cars were all kinds of fun
when they
worked.
They were, yeah.
When they worked.
Yeah. It was a love-hate relationship.
The Miata,
it was a love-hate relationship.
The Miata is that it is as well-built and as reliable as a Toyota Corolla.
That's right.
It is a car that you can, and you know this personally, can do track days in this thing, and it will not break. You may have to put new tires on it if you have a fun day. But other than that, and you can drive it to work, and it gets 35 miles per gallon if you don't work it too hard.
That's right.
And it'll go 200,000 miles before it needs any kind of significant work, sometimes longer than that. And you can pick up one for about $25,000-$26,000 brand new. There's literally nothing about this car not to like.
That's right. Yeah, you talk about track days. When I worked, the commute that I have, driving in at 4 o'clock in the morning on backcountry roads during the middle of a pandemic, every day was a track day, Eric. It was a blast. And then when I'd have to come home, there'd be traffic, and I'd have to wait for people, and slow-moving trucks that are dropping rocks. You know, I had to go through a lot of windshields because of where we live. But, you know, when I was driving home, I would just take the top down and just relax. It was a completely different car. You basically would convert it to a completely different type of car. So it could be, you know, a racer or it could be just a, you know, a cruiser. And that was the thing that was nice about it. It is very small, as you point out. You do wear it. You do put it on, and there's not a lot of room to put things. I like the comment that you had. You said, get some cargo pants because you're going to need the pockets to store stuff in.
You know, interestingly, the car gets slammed for not having a lot of storage capacity, but that's only partially true. Inside, as you know, there's not a lot of room for stuff. Mazda doesn't even put a center console in it to speak of. There's something, you know, behind, between the seats that you can toss a few things in.
Yeah.
But the trunk is actually kind of remarkably roomy. As part of my chicken coop project, I had to get some drainage rocks, and I put four bags of drainage rocks in the trunk, and I could have probably put two more in there, and it was no problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you use that kind of stuff all the time. But the key thing about it is, as you pointed out, you know, most of the cars have become appliances. You know, they're people movers or whatever. And this is a car that really connects you to the road. It connects you to the environment. It connects you to the driving experience. And it's just a lot of fun. And we just don't have that anymore. You know?
It's very sad.
Yeah, it is. And you can afford it.
You know? We used to take cars like this for granted. You know, these were the kinds of cars that you and me and people of a certain vintage, you know, who were born before the 90s, before everything started to turn sour, took for granted and helped us to fall in love with the car and to appreciate how fun it could be to just jump in the car and, you know, go pick up your girlfriend and go, you know, hit a backcountry road somewhere, maybe just stop here, stop there, wherever you felt like it, and just enjoy the drive.
Yeah.
We've lost that, and it's a very sad thing.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is. And it, again, you know, it's just... If you haven't done something, you point out that there really aren't any competitors left. That Toyota's and the Toyota Subaru, was it the BRZ?
Yeah,
or what, you
know. the 86 and the BRZ. But they're bringing out an updated version of that for 22, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they don't can it, you know. But, you know, and then your other alternative are real expensive exotic cars like Corvettes and Porsches. And, you know, it just, you know, it's just a... A great car that's available, and again, if you get a used one, the new ones are not that expensive compared to most cars, but the used ones are real affordable if you can find them.
Yeah, you can pick up a ready-to-go one for around $8,000 to $10,000.
Yeah. There's one other thing I would mention, and that's something that I've done a lot of, and that is the fact that because there were so many of them, and because people are connected to it as a driver's car, there's such an amazing aftermarket of parts that you can go in and modify stuff on it. And it had a great suspension, and it handled great, but I made it even better with suspension upgrades that I did years ago with bracing underneath and things. Because always with a convertible, the issue is shimmy and things like that. And the more rigid the frame, the better it's going to handle. So there's a lot of things like that. It's just an amazing variety of things that are out there. It turns it into kind of a Swiss Army knife. You can do anything that you want to with it.
You know? Yeah, Mazda made it very wrenchable, which you know, again, from personal experience. It's not a hyper-complicated car like, you know, the current Corvette with its mid-engine design and all of that, and you practically have to be an engineer and have engineering tools to do anything on that car. The Miata is a thing you can, you know, put the jack underneath of it and put some bracing on it, do this, do that. It's something that anybody with a basic tool set can have a lot of fun with.
Yeah. You know, I think back to a quote that I heard Rowan Atkinson say one time. The guy plays Mr. Bean and a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot of money, and he's a car aficionado, and so he can afford these hypercars, these super expensive cars. But there was kind of a sadness about it. He said, yeah, I don't really like what they've become. He said, you don't really so much drive them as you manage them. Because there's so much that's being done automatically, and it disconnects you from the car. And it's like, well, you need to get rid of that $3 million car and go out and buy a $3,000 Miata. You'll be connected again. You have a blast.
In addition to that, another thing to know about the Miata relative to these hypercars, the hypercars now, their performance is so extreme that in order to even begin to plumb the depths of what they're capable of, you have to operate at speeds and in a manner that even for a guy like me, and I drive pretty fast, is a bit much to do on the street.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, puts you at risk and puts others at risk. Whereas this Miata, you could have all kinds of fun operating at perfectly reasonable speeds, and that's exhilarating. Every single time you go for a drive in that car, you're having a good time.
Yes.
Whereas there's nothing, I think, more depressing, at least to me as a car guy, than moping along at 65 miles an hour in a car like a Corvette that does 200 miles an hour.
That's exactly right. Yeah, driving a slow car fast. And the thing is, when you put the... You know, back in the day when we used to roll windows down, things like that, you would get a sense of what was happening in the environment, and it also made it feel like the car was going faster because of the noise, because of the wind, and so forth. And
sure.
So that's why I would say, you know, I would take the top down. If I got in slow-moving traffic or something like that, I would take the top down. Automatically, it felt like I was going another 20 or 30 miles faster because and so it helps to ameliorate that. I've had situations where, and I haven't really done much to upgrade the engine on it, it's not slow. It's certainly safe for interstate acceleration and things like that. But it's really more of a momentum car. But I've had situations where I was really laying into it, shifting through the gears, and all of a sudden I see a cop. And it's like, whoa! And I look down. I'm doing the speed limit.
Right.
It's like you gotta love that.
It's a much more common car. And you know the virtue again is circle back to the mileage. These hypercars will kill you on gas.
Oh yeah.
Whereas, you know, this Miata, it's like, you know, you're driving a little Toyota Corolla. You know, it's extremely practical.
Yeah.
And something else about it that I want to touch on, I was out driving with my girlfriend, and we hit a rain squall. And as long as you're moving, it's amazing how well-designed that car is. The rain will not enter the passenger compartment as long as you're moving.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, I know that experience. Mine has got third generation, so it's got electric top that comes up, a hard top.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have that situation until we came to a spot where we had to stop sign or something like that, or a red light. And then it'd be raining hard, and it wouldn't get in on us, you know. But then we would stop, and then you had to wait 12 seconds for the thing to come
up.
That's
why I like the manual top. I mean, you literally can just reach behind you and
that's
pull
right.
it up, and you're fine.
That's right. Yeah, what we did with it was we found there's an aftermarket thing you can buy that allows you to raise the top while you're still going up to 30 miles an hour, 30, 35, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And, mm-hmm. and so with that solved the problem because I can keep the thing moving while I get the top up. And so, you know, and like I said, there's all kinds of customization stuff that's out there. I want to talk about your chicken coop that you're in the process of building. You did an article about the coop in progress, and you pointed out that you used the you didn't really want to use the Miata that much. You got your pickup truck for the big boards, although you did use it for some supplies for the
chicken
coop.
You know what, though? I'll say this, too, and probably Mazda. I don't know whether they'll like this or not because it's both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to actually take two 4x4x8 boards home with me in the Miata, of course, with the top down.
Yeah.
they rode shotgun with me, post.
Yeah, that's great. There's always a way to do it. You know, that's, as they say, the traction for Miata is always the answer. I mean, even for getting some poles home for your chicken coop. But I say that Miata stands for mine is a tiny auto. That's that's my expression.
That's hilarious.
But tell us about your.
I'm gonna have to remember that one.
Tell us about your chicken
coop. This chicken thing, I'm trying to get my new coop done before I can't get lumber any longer without having to provide proof of jab to get it at Home Depot or Lowe's.
I know.
A lot of people, I'm concerned about the direction the country's headed in, and in particular, I'm concerned about supply chain interruptions. I'm worried about further lockdowns, and most of all, of being in a situation where the government can pressure me via food to do things like roll up my sleeve to get a jab. So,
and that's coming.
I'm stepping up my chicken and duck. I have both operation and building this new coop, both to provide food in the form of eggs and meat for myself. But I'm also considering potentially making it sort of a side gig and having, because my chickens and ducks are free range. They're out wandering my property all day, and there's actually quite a market for free range eggs and free range pastured meat as well.
Absolutely.
So it's something that people who are listening to this, if they're able to do it, might want to consider doing, both for their own families and potentially as something that they can use to barter and even make some money doing.
That's right. Yeah, whatever you do, whether you're raising tomatoes or you've got chickens that are laying eggs, you always wind up with more than you can use. And it's always a way to do a market. And this is one of the key things. That's why I wanted to talk about it. Because as those of us who do not want to take the experimental jab, are being excluded from everything, and make no doubt about it, it is coming. We've already seen, and again, you know, the people who are at the forefront of all this in America, New York City, L.A., and in New York City, they shut everything down but the grocery stores. But in L.A., the L.A. City Council wanted to shut down the grocery stores as well. They've already done that in France and in other places. So this is not a theory. This is a global agenda. It's rolling out at different speeds around the world based on resistance. The way I described it yesterday, Eric, I said it's like an electric circuit. They've got the same potential everywhere. And the difference in the current at the rate at which this is flowing is your variable resistance. And so we need to turn up our resistance all the way to stop. But if that doesn't happen, we are going to be shut out of even getting groceries. And so it's important for people to understand that not only can you feed yourself, but you can start to establish a barter network or can start to operate outside of this corporate governance that is worldwide. And this is true of everybody in every country.
No question. Self-sufficiency to the degree possible and decentralization to the degree possible. Forming our own parallel structures, our own societies, people that we deal with and who deal with us as free-range, healthy human beings. Yeah. That's one of the ways that we can push back against this. And this is a burgeoning movement. It's becoming very popular. In my own area, there are lots of people who are doing this that I'm connected with. And from what I gather all around the country, it's the same thing. And it's well and good to continue to protest and to resist what's going on in the cities and the suburbs. But at the same time, I think it behooves us to make provisions for ourselves to ride this out.
That's right. Yeah, they're going to coop us up, so we better get busy with our chicken coops.
Yep.
Because
or a garden. You know, tailor it to your situation.
Yeah,
whatever works for you, and whatever you have the time and the expertise and are willing to do, just so long as you're doing something, do not be caught with your proverbial pants down.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, even if you have a situation where you've got a lot of chickens and you got a lot of eggs and. And you're basically just on an egg diet, that's better than nothing at all. And you'll be able to find other people who have complementary products that you'll be able to barter and to trade with, I think. A good example.
Well, if you store up.
Go ahead.
Yeah, store up some rice, store up some beans and various other vegetables, and you can use the eggs to supplement and to have the protein. That's the element that they give you, along with the vitamins that are contained within the eggs.
Yeah.
So it's not just an egg diet. You know, you can actually have a very wholesome and nutritional diet with eggs providing the primary protein source.
That's right. Yeah, I've interviewed a couple of times a guy that's got a website, civildefensemanual.com, and he's got a couple of really detailed manuals about survival. And one of the things he talks about is that if you have freshly laid eggs, not the ones that you get from the grocery store that are washed, but freshly laid eggs, he said you can store those things up for 2 years without refrigeration with a certain preparation process that he talks about in his book that is traditional. You know, he said you talk about the cowboys used to go on camping trips and how they would take eggs with them. How'd they do that? How'd they keep them fresh? Well, there's a way that you can do that. And so there's a lot of different things out there, and there's a lot of things that you can play up ahead of time. Yeah.
Well, now that you mention it, I this is an important point. When an egg is laid by a bird, it has something called the bloom, which is a coating. If you have ever seen an egg that was just laid, you'll see it. There's a wetness around the egg. And nature designed that so that the egg will not go bad. So you can take a freshly laid egg, and as long as you don't wash it, you can keep it on the kitchen table for days, if not weeks, and it's perfectly safe to eat it.
That's right. Yeah, and you can do a few more things to prepare it, and you can keep it for years, you know, according to his book. So, again, all these different things. He's not a sponsor, but I just mentioned he's got some great advice there at that site. When we went up to New York, we're going to try to stop by and see you, but we had problems with our rental car. I had a set of those books I wanted to give to you that I thought you would get a lot out of it. But we'll get it to you somehow, one way or the other.
The next time you're up here, I should actually have the thing finished and up and running.
Well, there's always other things that you can do, right? The preparation never ends.
Well, the next thing after I get this done, I've decided to build a proper greenhouse with solar panels and the whole works, so that once that's done, I'll have the ability to provide year-round vegetables and meat. And even if the world doesn't go to pot, this is, I think, a really wonderful thing to have, because it's nutritious. It's far better than the stuff that you're getting, the GMO chemically laced stuff that they're trying to sell you at the grocery store that is making everybody sick.
That's right. Yeah, and that brings up another point. I've talked about this a lot. You know, whether you're talking about the food that you're eating or whether you're talking about educating your children, I think what we're going to find, if we're able to get this stuff together, I think we're going to find that even though we might have a little bit simpler life, we're going to enjoy it more. Which goes back to what we were just talking about, the sports cars, right? You could have a very, very complex, very expensive, very high-tech sports car, but you can also enjoy an older one that you can pick up for a couple thousand dollars used, and it can actually be a more enjoyable experience. And I think people are going to find that in terms of teaching their kids, in terms of growing their own food, in terms of having the kind of independence and freedom. And this goes back, mm-hmm. Eric, to the kind of society, you know, Jefferson said, that he believed that an agrarian society was essential for a climate of liberty because of that kind of independence that people had. And he said, you know, he was very down on cities. He said they're a threat to the health, the wealth, and the liberty of man. And that's what the globalists want to pack us into, is into cities, into little tiny crates where we're connected through a metaverse, a virtual reality to each other, and only connected through their portals. That's the world that they want to have for us.
It's alienating.
It is.
It's very alienating. One of my favorite writers is the sci-fi writer Robert Heinlein, and one of the quotes that he had that I very much like is that specialization is for ants. And what he meant by that is that human beings are naturally happier in a versatile environment where they have control over most of the factors that affect their lives.
That's right.
So this, to get back to this idea of connectedness, after we get off the phone, I'm going to walk out to my current chicken coop and I'm going to collect eggs. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go down to the store to buy them. I'm just going to collect eggs from my birds that walk on my land, and then I'm going to see them walk around. And it gives me a sense of connectedness to my land and to the food that I eat. And I find this to be very, very gratifying on a spiritual level.
Yes.
You know, this is a healthy and good thing, and we've lost that. And I think as people experience it, they realize, wow, this is kind of nice, you know, to not be staring at a cell phone all day, but to actually watch a sunset, for example, to go for a walk in the woods, to do something with your kids outside instead of sitting in front of the idiot box and listening to Dr.
That's
Fauci.
Right. That's right. Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to find that we're going to have something, but we need to keep our freedom. And you know, freedom to be able to do what we want. But we don't want the freedom to participate in their society, in their institutions, in their corporations, and to eat their processed food and to take their medicine and the rest of this stuff. I think we're going to find that the things are going to be better. I also wanted to talk to you because I saw a picture of Harry Brown on one of your articles. Mm-hmm. Harry Brown, yep. I got to know Harry Brown while I was running for Congress back in 1996. Mm-hmm. And there was a quote from him: government is force, pure and simple. There is no way to sugarcoat that. And because government is force, it will attract the worst elements of society.
That's right.
People who want to use government to avoid having to earn their living and to avoid having to persuade others to accept their ideas voluntarily. Boy, we're having that in spades, aren't mm-hmm. we? Force ruins everything is the title of your article.
Talk sure. It attracts pathological people.
Yeah.
You know, think about that. The kind of person who wants to lord it over somebody else. When we were kids, we recognize such people. We call them bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now we elect them. And, you know, if you can see extreme examples of this, obvious examples of this, in the persons of people like Cuomo in New York and Newsom in California.
Yep.
But all of them, fundamentally, they're possessed of this attitude that they are our masters. They know best. And our job is simply to submit and defer to their superior judgment over us.
Yes. That's right. That's right. Yeah, Harry Brown had I remember his book was How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. You know, talking about getting out of it, and I think that's what we're all going to find, and we're being forced into this, and I think that's going to be ultimately it's going to be a difficult transition to make for many of us. You've got an article talking about how GM is now forcing everybody out of the company, but this is happening everywhere.
Yep.
I think a big part of this, you know, not just General Motors, but, you know, we're seeing this happening everywhere. We're seeing it happening even in the military. I think a large part of this is that they want to have an excuse to kick people out, get them out of off of the payroll, to get them off of, to some degree or the other, in the case of the military, in many cases, off of the retirement benefits. And they want to reduce the workforce. They want to put everybody on universal basic income as a handout, and they can blame it on COVID, and they can use the vaccine as a weapon to make it happen.
Sure. You know, in a way, though, this could be healthy for us. I think most of us, to one degree or another, have made accommodation or made peace with these little petty infringements and usurpations that we all deal with, ranging from income taxes all the way down the line, seatbelt laws, you name it. We figure, well, you know, on balance, overall, I'm able to earn my living, I'm able to pay my bills, so I'll put up with this. It's becoming intolerable, though. It's becoming impossible for people to put up with it.
That's
and
right.
That is what's propelling us to decide, you know what, I've had my fill of this, and I'm going to opt out of this.
That's right.
I'm going to figure out a way to assert my own freedom and my own judgment in my own life, and with my family and with my friends, and that's the end of it. And that's how we get our power back, by just not having anything to do with them anymore.
That's right. And when you raise your chickens and your eggs and when you grow your vegetables and that sort of thing, your labor is untaxed, what you're investing in that.
Yep.
Unlike when you're working for your employer and you're getting hit with all this stuff and all of a sudden it's like, where did it all go?
You get the full value of your investment in time, money, and effort.
That's right. But we're still going to have to hang together collectively to defend individual liberty. I like that expression, because if we don't, the goons and the thugs will not leave us alone. They will come to our individual homesteads and they will destroy the gardens, they'll destroy the chicken coops, and they'll throw us into some kind of a detention camp because we're somehow terrorists for being outside of their system. So we're still going to have to fight them politically. Even if you're not interested in government, and I'm not interested in having anything to do with government, even though I ran for Congress, I certainly didn't want to win. But, it's the sort of thing you have to, you may not be interested in it, but they're interested in you. And they're going to single you out. And so from a defensive standpoint, these people who are constantly invading our lives in one way or the other, we have to keep an eye on them. We have to know what they're going to do, and we have to act together to try to stop that. That's the key thing.
I think as a psychological question, we have to rescind moral sanction. We have to stop accepting guilt and blame. We're not the problem. We're not the bad people. They are.
Yeah.
We're not killing Granny. We're not fouling the climate. All of this is nonsense designed to make us feel shameful and make us willing to accept these unreasonable and tyrannical things. And we've got to stop doing that.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Shame is their big game. Shame and peer pressure, that's what we see on social media with all this stuff. And it's like, go ahead, call me names. It doesn't really bother me. But there are other things that they can do, and that's the thing that we need to be concerned about other than the shame. The shame and the groupthink that is out there, that's easily dismissed, but we have to be and we need to get over that individually. But the big thing is still their collective power. So that's the thing
we have
to keep an eye on. But it's great to hear that you're making progress through with your chicken coop. Glad to hear that. It's been great talking to you. And just to talk a little bit about living life normally and just driving a real car.
Absolutely. Let's do it again soon.
We will. All right. Thank you very much.
And I will send you some pictures.
Okay. That sounds great. Eric Peters, epautos.com. Mobility, liberty, and practical car reviews. We're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and before we get back into the news, I just want to say thank you to the listeners, and especially to you listeners who support us. We were able to get up to, I think it's 96% right now. So it's just slightly higher than the gas gauge shows there. I think that goes up. We got it broken into eighths, so I think it shows, 7/8 full. But it's a little bit fuller than that because Karen went by and picked up some things yesterday at the post office. And I just want to say, as she goes through these letters, she typically clips off the end of it. And she was just absolutely amazed with this one letter. She didn't do that. It was taped. And so she opened it up and she said, oh, look at that. That's nice. They wrote on the inside of this thing, God bless. And then Lori, who sent this, really did bless us with a very generous contribution. And if she hadn't opened it up that way, she wouldn't have seen that. So I just want to thank you, Lori, and many others who have made very generous contributions to make this happen. And again, we have contributions that range from $3 on up. And so if we have a lot of people that contribute a little, that does the job. But we have some people who have been very faithful contributors throughout this. A couple of cards that we got in the mail, Kathy and Juan said, we didn't discover you until you left InfoWars. Wish it had been sooner. You are both in our prayers and in our hearts, and we all need to stand with this together. And so I do appreciate that. That is the issue. We have to stand collectively for individual liberty. And we have to understand what is essentially behind this. This is essentially like everything else in life. This is a spiritual war. And we do not need to be ashamed of our Christian convictions. And we need to understand where the solutions to all of this are in our individual lives as well as in our collective nation. This is from Jeff. It says, I'm married to a hardcore lifetime Democrat. It takes a lot of compassion and self-control to get along. Well, see, there you go. That that helps. That is a blessing, in a sense, to have that challenge there. And again, you know, we want to, you know, our relationships with people are paramount, especially in our family. I hate to see how this is being used to divide people, even over this vaccine thing. I've seen this dividing families. And you know, if we have situations like that, and I understand those of us who see the health risks in it, it really breaks our heart to see family members who take it. I just talked to my 96-year-old aunt yesterday, who's in a nursing home, and fortunately, she's not taken it yet. I had spent, I mentioned this once before, I spent over an hour on the phone. She's kind of hard of hearing and hard of thinking, too, a little bit at this point. But I spent over an hour with her several months ago trying to explain to her in very basic terms. I didn't get any details with it, but just don't take the vaccine. Over and over, that level of discussion, not what we get into here. And so every time I talk to her, we talk about that again. And so yesterday, I just wanted to check up again and see, and she had not taken it. She says, yeah, they offered it to us, but I said no. I said, and she said, it might be kind of dangerous. I don't know. And so she understands. She understands. But so many people have seen family members who have been gaslighted, deceived, misled by this, pressured by this. But that doesn't need to be a situation where we break fellowship with them. We want to pray for them. We want to pray for their health. You know, ultimately, God is in control of this. He can protect people from things, even if they are dangerous and self-inflicted to an extent. And so, you know, we need to try to make sure that we build bridges and relationships with them over and above that. I know how dangerous this is. And I know other people who have said, you know, relatives have gotten other relatives to take it, and they have passed away as a result of that. So I understand how that is. But we're constantly confronted with challenges. This is, I wanted to pass this a prayer request on from Jason for his grandson. To tell you what the situation is, he said, my youngest grandson just got back from a second doctor's checkup. He's less than a year old, and they've determined that his skull is fused, and he has some issues with how his rib cage has developed. In our eyes, he seems to be normal, but we can see that he's oddly shaped, so I do not think the doctors are lying to us. He has developed well, but we can see that something is wrong with his bone development. So the doctors want to do surgery on his skull and his rib cage. But he said, I would prefer that God heal him instead of him going through this dangerous surgery. And so I just want to tell you to pray for Jeremiah Lucas Oyan. I think is the way he pronounced his last name. You know, when we look at difficult situations like this that we all face in our families from time to time, we look at this and we say, why do things like this happen? Why does God put these types of things in our life? Is it discipline? Well, sometimes challenges can come from discipline. But do you remember when Jesus was confronted and he healed the man who was blind? But when they brought him to Jesus, they said, so did this man sin or did his family sin that he was this way? And he had been blind all of his life. And Jesus said, neither, but so that you could see God's work. And that's what happens. That's what happens in our lives. We have these situations, as painful and difficult as they can be. We have these situations where God puts us in these situations so that we can see him working in our lives. And he does it for our own good. And so we just are, again, pray for Jeremiah Lucas Oyan. And I pray that God would grant a request for him, that people would see God working in his life. New Zealand has reported the first death following a Pfizer vaccine shot. I doubt that this is the first death. This is the first reported death. Big difference there, isn't it? It's like people dying from COVID or people dying with COVID. And I'll just remind you the games that they play with this. You know, now, even if you die within the first 2 weeks of getting the vaccine, they don't count it as a vaccine death because, you know, according to their definition, you're not vaccinated until at least 2 weeks after that first shot. They don't even count you as being part of the club. But it worked the other way, didn't it? At the beginning of this, you know, somebody could be vaccinated, and if they died within 30, not vaccinated, they could have a test, and if they passed this PCR test, where they're magnifying it a trillion times, then and they died within 30 days, they counted that as a COVID death, even if the person had no symptoms, even if they died in a way that was not respiratory, not in any way manifesting what they said COVID was. Just to remind you, this is what the health officials at the time were saying. They admitted it.
Of people dying of COVID. So the case definition is very simplistic. It means at the time of death, it was a COVID positive diagnosis. So that means that if you were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means that if technically, if even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So everyone who's listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that that was the cause of the death, but they had COVID at the time of death. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, that's very helpful, except people don't understand that. And we're playing by exactly the opposite rules now. If you died from the vaccine, again, it's got to be 14 days beyond the point at which you got vaccinated. And then they'll say, well, yeah, but it's rare, or, you know, there were comorbidities that involved this. They will find some way to explain it away. Very different standard. In New Zealand, of course, the person this first reported death acknowledged, let's just say this, the first acknowledged death from the vaccines, a woman suffered from myocarditis. Well, imagine that. And it happened right away after getting the vaccine. They're not trying to deny it. They said that woman suffered a rare heart muscle inflammation side effect, and it happened immediately afterwards. And they can't avoid it when it is happening to people who are young and healthy. And so understand that this narrative that is only happening to young, healthy people is not true either. It's just that they can't explain it away with another comorbidity. Butler County judge has ordered Westchester Hospital to treat a COVID patient with ivermectin despite the CDC warning. This is coming out of Ohio, out of Cincinnati. This is the second time that I'm aware of that a family has gone to a judge to force a hospital to treat their family member. And that's another cause of these deaths. Medical malpractice, financially incentivized. Again, from the very beginning, you know, you diagnose this clinically, you don't even have to have a PCR test to magnify the viral debris. A PCR test that they admit cannot distinguish, but and we told you this as well, but now they're admitting it. But they're still using the PCR test to take away people's freedoms. And they're going to continue to do that in every country around the world. They're using one positive PCR test to lock down cities of several million people or entire countries down in New Zealand and in Australia. And yet these PCR tests, we're told, cannot distinguish between any kind of respiratory disease. Can't distinguish between COVID-19, between that and the flu or cold or RSV or any of these other things. And yet they continue down this path. And so there was a case before in New York where you had a family, the 80-plus-year-old grandmother was already intubated with a ventilator, was dying on her deathbed. And they finally got the hospital, somebody there at the hospital allowed them to give her ivermectin. She immediately improved. And then they would not give her a follow-up because they found out what was going on. Somebody in the hospital, somebody with the money. And so they went to a judge. They got the judge to grant them an exception. And they would not allow, the hospital would not give it to her. They said, well, we'll allow a doctor to come in from the outside and give her the medicine, but we're not going to give her that medicine. You can't force us to give the medicine. Isn't that interesting? You cannot force us. And yet what are they trying to do? They're trying to force their doctors, their nurses, to get the vaccine that is not tested. So this is a case in Ohio, Butler County judge. A woman out of Cincinnati whose husband has been on a ventilator at the Westchester Hospital won a court order forcing the hospital to treat her husband's infection with ivermectin. But they refused to say that in Cincinnati.com. They say, with a treatment commonly used for livestock. Now, this is an absolute lie. As I pointed out before, Merck has already sold 1 billion doses of this, of ivermectin, before any of this COVID stuff started. This is not, it's used for livestock, but it's also used for humans, 1 billion doses for humans. Judge Gregory Howard gave the go-ahead to a doctor's prescription of 30 milligrams of ivermectin daily for 3 weeks, and this is a very different thing if you're doing it prophylactically or if you're trying to treat somebody, as requested by his wife. So we're talking about medical malpractice for money, for money. And we're talking about removing people's informed consent. And this doctor who is treating is listed as a founder of Frontline Doctors, Frontline Care Alliance. And they point out in this paper that you can go to the Frontline, America's Frontline Doctors, and you can find information about how to get ivermectin. It has prices and locations of pharmacies that will supply it from Afghanistan to Fort Lauderdale, from Pennsylvania to Brazil. Neither the doctor's office nor the hospital would give an update on the patient's condition, citing privacy and health care laws. And then Cincinnati.com wants to throw this in, you know, scare you like the FDA is doing. Poison control centers have reported an uptick in calls about the drug, with some callers reporting significant symptoms such as extreme vomiting to blurred vision. Now, compare that to what we're seeing. A couple million people now between the U.S. and the European database with these vaccines. And the European database is only about a half of the European EU countries. 2 million people. And we're talking about people being paralyzed permanently. We're talking about people dying, 13,000 in the U.S. alone. They're talking about people who get an overdose of this, extreme vomiting, and blurred vision. And as I said before, if somebody died, it would be everywhere. It hasn't been anybody that's died from this, obviously, because that's the dog that did not bark, the media that did not crow about this. And if you're going to talk about poison control, again, the difference is dosage. If these people are getting poisoned, it's probably because they're having to self-medicate because of the corruption with AMA doctors and with the pharmaceutical industry. So Julie Smith filed a lawsuit on behalf of her husband of 24 years. He's been sedated, intubated, put on a ventilator, and he had, that was on August 1st, after 3 weeks in this hospital, the leeching and the bleeding wasn't working. Because, I mean, we're back to, obviously, for the last year, we've been doing these ventilators. And think about it. You know, we've had people who died from pneumonia because of the flu every year. They would use these types of statistics to try to scare people into getting the flu shot, which was really a shot in the dark. They didn't even know what strain of flu was going to be coming along. People typically get sick from the flu shot. And all in all, we've talked about that many times. But did they ever, in all of these years, even when they were trying to sell the flu shot, did they ever have all these ventilators? Of course not. Remember at the beginning of all this, how Trump was naming and shaming and whining and blaming all these companies that weren't producing the ventilators quickly enough? How they put out all this money. We've got to have ventilators everywhere. We'd never put people on these ventilators before. And we've had a lot of doctors and nurses talking about how dangerous they are and what a high case fatality rate they have for people that they put on these ventilators. This is why I say it's financially incentivized medical malpractice. They didn't do this before with pneumonia and side effects with flu. And we don't know, because of their tests, they don't know if they're treating people for the flu or for COVID or for RSV or for a cold. But they're doing different approaches. They're not working. They're killing people. They're kicking the medicine out of people's hands, not allowing things that we know are safe, effective, and most importantly, affordable. Israeli experts analyze mRNA COVID vaccines' long-term effects. Imagine that. As I've said many times, just because you give this to everybody in your country in Israel or worldwide, it doesn't mean that you've done a long-term test. A big short-term test is not a long-term test. But they come back and they say, well, you know, we'll start to look at the long-term results, but there's absolutely no reason to think that there's any danger in any of this. Why wouldn't you? And we never assume that something is safe. That's why we do the test. That's why you have the approval. But now the opposite is true. Well, because this is something that we wanted, we're just going to assume that it's safe. The media, as informationliberation.com points out, has begun mocking Americans for believing their propaganda and their lies about the vaccine. And so Chris Minahan at Information Liberation has several headlines from USA Today. The current one says, and this came out August the 19th, no, a vaccine doesn't make you Superman. Breakthrough cases are increasing amid Delta variant. So you thought this thing was going to keep you safe, says USA Today? Well, you're stupid. But here's what they were saying not too long ago. On COVID-19 vaccines, they quoted Scott Gottlieb, FDA commissioner for Trump, who is now on the board of Pfizer. And at the time, he was off the board of Pfizer. But get as many shots in your arm and arms as possible right away, says ex-FDA chief in a Q&A, Dr. Scott Gottlieb. And then there was one from February. Take whatever COVID vaccine you can get. All of them stop death and hospitalization. All of these from the same paper, USA Today. And so all of them stop death and hospitalization. And now they're saying, no, a vaccine doesn't make you Superman. You're still going to get sick. You're still going to die. Let's go back to an update as to what is happening in Japan. I reported last week that they'd taken 1.6 million doses of Moderna off of the market because they had found some contaminated batches. And if you remember, they said at the time that that's contaminated with a substance that seems to react with magnets. It reacts with magnets. That was a quote from the Japanese agencies. They said, we think it might be metal. Well, isn't that interesting that you would have metal contamination, enough of it that it would interact with magnets, and that it would be in these vaccines, you know, where people were saying, hey, you know, look, I can put a magnet here on my chest and it doesn't fall down. The news alarmed millions of Americans who received the Moderna jab, and it also rattled Moderna's stock price, putting a damper on what had been a market-leading bull run. They said that two people died now. This is an update. It's not just that they found contaminated batches, not just that they found that it had something they thought was metallic because it reacted with magnets. But they said two people died after receiving the Moderna vaccine shots, and they were part of the lots that were later suspended and discovered of having contaminants. But here's how the government reports it. They said, well, there's absolutely no reason to believe that those things were connected. Why did the CDC put out the questionnaires saying, we want you to give us all of the personal information of everybody who takes the vaccine. And, oh, by the way, here's another field here to tell us who refused it. But we want all their personal information because, you know, we need to track which vaccine they got. So we make sure we give them a reminder 30 days out. Well, you don't need to know that about the people who didn't get the vaccine, do you? What was the purpose of that field? But the other part of it was that they said, well, we need to know so we can give a reminder. And since, you know, we haven't tested this stuff, we'd like to know the batch number that's there. Because if you've got people, if you've got some contaminated batches and you've got a couple of people who died from this stuff, you might want to make the connection. But when you have a connection like that, you have government officials, even in Japan, saying, well, I don't think there's any connection there. I mean, we had to take these things off the market because of contamination. We had two people die, two men. One of them was in his 20s. The other was in his 30s. They died within days of receiving the second dose of the jab. Oh, of course, that wouldn't count then because, you know, they have to go out weeks, 2 weeks before they're counted. So it's just a coincidence, right? They said, at this time, we do not have any evidence that these deaths are caused by the vaccines. We're going to presume that they're safe. And no matter how many people drop dead, we're going to keep telling you they're safe. Moderna vaccine was halted in Okinawa after contamination from quote-unquote black substances. So 3 days after the Japanese Ministry of Health announced that they were pulling 1.6 million doses because of contamination with black substances that reacted to magnets, as they put it, led to the deaths of two men in their 30s who died after receiving their second dose. Two jurisdictions have halted or limited use after more contaminated vials were discovered. More. And not only that, but they have now upped this to 2.6. They've taken another million off of the market. They've now taken 2.6 million doses off the market in Japan over contamination fears. They said they saw not only black substances found in syringes and a vial, they also found pink substances in a different syringe. So they said, we're suspending the use of the Moderna jab as foreign substances were spotted. They suspect that it's a manufacturing issue at a plant. Well, you know, that's why, one of the reasons why I think that Pfizer covered their bases on it, as I pointed out earlier in the program. Stat News reported, based on the statements from three Latin American countries and later on two other countries that talked about how Pfizer was shaking them down, saying you will hold us harmless even for manufacturing errors. And I don't know if Moderna got that deal or not, but they probably did. So here's a physician and the vice chair of a vaccine information group saying, it's unlikely, in my opinion, that the contamination of foreign substances led to these sudden deaths. Yeah, they will always say that. They will always deny this. This is never going to change. And so, again, it brings up the questions, again, about these people who said that they had magnetic effects. Going back to 2016, The Guardian was talking about a magnetized protein called magneto that could be used to manipulate neural activity. At the time, The Guardian reported the researchers inserted the magneto DNA sequence into the genome of a virus together with the gene encoding green fluorescent protein and regulatory DNA sequences that cause the construct to be expressed only in specific types of neurons. They then injected the virus into the brains of mice, targeting the cortex, and dissected the animals' brains to identify the cells that emitted green fluorescence. Using microelectrodes, they then showed that applying a magnetic field to the brain slices activated magneto so that the cells produce nervous impulses. In one final experiment, the researchers injected magneto into freely behaving mice into a deep brain structure that contained dopamine-producing neurons involved in a reward and motivation. And then they placed the animals into an apparatus that was split into magnetized and non-magnetized sections. Mice expressing magneto spent far more time in the magnetized areas than the mice that did not, because activation of the protein, this magnetic protein, caused the neurons expressing it to release dopamine, so that the mice found that being in those areas was rewarding. It would release dopamine. So the magnetism, so they put this substance in, this magnetized protein called magneto, and they found that they could expose these mice to a magnetic field, and they would get a dopamine rush. And so it can remotely control the firing of neurons deep within the brain, and it can control many, many complex behaviors, not just a reward. So when we look at this, and I've said this many times, you know, I've debated with some people over the weekend, you know, what is really going on with this, with these vaccines, with the mRNA, with these so-called contaminations that react with magnets. The possibilities are endless. The reality is that we have no idea what these people are doing. We do know that they've gotten hundreds of billions of dollars just from the Obama administration for the Brain Project. We know that DARPA is bragging about the fact that they can implant memories and they can selectively remove memories. And whenever I talk about the technology, without even speculating what they're doing, the reality is that what they're capable of doing is really beyond our imaginations. No matter how much of a conspiracy theorist you want to be, you cannot imagine what these people are capable of doing technologically. The truth is far stranger and far more advanced than science fiction. And what is really bad about this is that when we look at these people who have consciences that are seared with a hot iron, they are not only technologically capable of doing anything, they are morally capable of doing anything. Like Ted Bundy, if you assume that these people are normal, like you, that they're not capable of this, you leave yourself open to the same type of threat that Ted Bundy, the serial killer and rapist, or the other direction, he's rapist and then serial killer. He was a very charming, very intelligent, good-looking guy, and women just could not believe that he was that kind of monster. And that's the problem. We see these people, they operate from their ivory towers, they have the adoration, the praise and the support of all the mainstream media. They get, like Fauci, massive salaries. He's paid more than the presidents are. And or you look at the billionaires like Bill Gates and how they have more money than anybody's ever had in history. And so we look at all this and we just can't imagine what monsters these people are. But they're not even slowing down the production at these factories that produced the 2.6 million contaminated doses in Japan. Moderna vaccine production continues in EU amidst the contamination probe. Not a problem at all. I liked this article from the American Thinker because, you know, we have constantly hear these people say, well, look at what vaccines have done for us. You know, they've saved us from smallpox. They've saved us from polio. I talked about smallpox and how You know, they don't have to worry about different strains, different variants of smallpox. The smallpox vaccine seemed to work on all of them. I don't think that what we're looking at here is an attack by different variants. I think what we're seeing is the effect of the vaccine itself. But when we talk about polio, never forget that as they rolled this out, they had SV40. Remember SV40? Simian virus 40. That was a contamination in the polio vaccines that caused cancer. From 1957 to 1963, those of us in the baby boom generation, 30% of the polio vaccines administered contained this cancer-causing monkey virus, SV40. So for a period of 6 years, a third of the polio vaccines, by a conservative estimate, had that. They probably all had it. They probably just want us to think, oh, okay, 30%, okay. Well, I got a two-thirds chance it's not me. Let me tell you, the difference has nothing to do. The difference is your individual difference. The difference is God's sovereignty in your life. It doesn't have anything to do. They probably put the SV40 in every single one of these things for a six-year period. Did this result in a cancer epidemic? Well, some people believe that it did, as there was a sharp rise in soft tissue cancer in the following decades. The medical establishment disagrees, saying only a small number of cancer cases can be traced back to the polio vaccine. Doesn't matter. Just a couple of people. You know, it doesn't matter if we leave 250 people behind in Afghanistan. You know, doesn't matter how many people drop dead after the vaccine. We don't care. It's just small. One result of the damage caused by these initial polio vaccines is that strict new safety regulations and procedures were instituted and are now being ignored. Legislation was passed to exempt vaccine manufacturers from civil damages due to the side effects of their vaccines. So that was really the end result of this. As this article concludes, it said, a takeaway lesson from the early polio vaccines is that haste makes waste. Or we could say that warp speed is warped ethics. Previous COVID-19 infection prevents Delta better than a Pfizer shot. And again, I don't believe there's a Delta variant out there. I think that what we're seeing is the effects of these vaccines. In Israel, vaccinated individuals had 27 times higher risk of infection compared to those with natural immunity from a prior exposure. So, to sum up, folks, you have 27 times higher risk of symptomatic infection. Another study out of Israel shows that natural immunity is 13 times more effective than vaccines at stopping any of this stuff. So natural immunity is better. People who are vaccinated have 251 times the viral load of the unvaccinated. Now, the way they explained that, I gave you the explanation the other day. I don't think that's the real explanation. I said, well, you know, they get more of a viral load because the immune system trained by these vaccines is doing a better job of controlling it. And so the viral load is accumulating without people getting symptoms and they don't realize it. So it just continues to build and to build and to build. I don't believe that. I think if you've got that kind of a viral load, 251 times more, there's something else going on. I suspect that the viral load is being generated by the vaccine. The vaccine is not helping people. It did not train their immune system. I think that's what we're seeing. So 13 times better immunity if you have it naturally. They are finding that they have 251 times the viral load. These people are sicker. They're super spreaders. But we all must get the shot. Just think about that. Just think about that. And we're going to be right back and talk about that. We also have some headline news. We'll talk about the mandates, some updates, some legal updates, as well as the health issues on that. And we're going to talk about some headline news. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, so what are my options if I don't want to get the jab? Well, this article from the New American is very, very thorough, so I'd suggest this is going back to August the 27th, Saturday. So I'd suggest if you're in a situation like this, it's a good resource because they have a lot of discussions of places where you can get information. The OSHA will not enforce 29 CFR 1904's recording requirement to require any employers to record worker side effects from COVID-19 vaccination through May of next year, 2022. So what does this tell you? All right, look at how manic they were to record every single person that got a positive PCR test, but they don't even want to know about any reactions to the vaccine. Katie Kern, an RN who was a frontline nurse during the crisis of 2020, she did not ask to be called a hero, but her personal sacrifice and dedication earned her that consideration. In 2021, she went from hero to zero in the eyes of her employer, Henry Ford Health System, and I've covered the people who were protesting there as well. I think as a listener, one of the protesters who sent that to me, pictures of people there. Katie, choking back tears, trembling as she recalled the incident, she reports in June of this year, 2021, I received an email from Henry Ford threatening termination of my employment for noncompliance with their COVID vaccine mandate. The ultimatum was delivered after months of oppressive bullying, threats, and suspensions. And, of course, this story is all too familiar. So they recommend, they said, here's four steps to follow. First, do not quit or abandon your post. Second, put your refusal to get the jab in writing and submit it to your employer. Include the reason for your refusal and be precise. Third, keep a copy of your documentation, including the method and the date of your submittal. Fourth, understand the deadlines associated with the process, from submitting your refusal to responding to a denial. So in other words, and in every case, you want to make sure that you have local legal counsel for specific advice on the application of the law to your particular case. And so you want to document this very well. This is one of the reasons why, for the longest time, I had pinned at the top some excerpt from my interview with Catherine Austin Fitz on her website, Solari. She had forms, and this is a couple of months ago, talking about how you can send paperwork to your employer, to your school, to essentially proactively put them on notice that you're not going to just take this and that they're going to have some legal liability, even if this thing is, as it is now, FDA approved. But continuing on this article from New American, they say unlawful employment practices, according to 42 U.S. Code 2000E-2, says to fail to refuse or hire or to discharge any individual or otherwise to discriminate against any individual with respect to his compensation, terms, conditions, or privileges of employment because of an individual's religion. And that's one of the things in there, along with race, color, religion, sex, all these different, national origin. But religion, let's just focus on that. That's what's relevant right here. Or to limit, to segregate, or to classify employees or applicants for employment in any way which would deprive or tend to deprive any individual of employment opportunities or otherwise adversely affect the status as an employee because of religion. They're prohibited from doing that. That's an unlawful employment practice. Now, again, when we look at all of this stuff, trying a lawsuit, we don't have honest courts, but occasionally you do find an honest judge. I mean, we just had a couple of stories about judges who said, no, you have to, if they want to take ivermectin, you got to let them take ivermectin. It's not approved by the FDA for this particular use, but it's approved for human use. More than a billion doses were sold for humans before any of this stuff ever started. They go on to say the sincerely held religious belief need only be yours alone. And there is no requirement, this is important, that your belief is generally accepted as theological dogma in the church that you go to. The key words are sincerely held religious belief. Be sure to use that phrase. They said you can look at other documents and you can get ideas about how you want to phrase this, but it needs to be your own personal letter. Do not cut and paste. Do not plagiarize, in other words, the stuff. But you do need to use those magic words, sincerely held religious belief. And then they give you some ideas of some biblical principles that you can use. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. This is not yours, Caesar. You do not have the authority to do this in my life, and neither does the corporation that you work for. And, you know, when you render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, that means that if Caesar tells you to put pinwheels on your head, we don't live, Caesar was an emperor. He was a dictator. And I know Fauci thinks that he is. And I know we got a lot of public health officials who think they are. We have FDA officials, CDC officials. We got Fauci. We got public health officials at the state level, at the local levels. They all think that they're Caesar, but they're not. They're all subordinate to the Constitution. The Constitution is Caesar. And so these people are in rebellion to authority. That's what you need to understand as well. We had a question that was being put out in Washington State. It was going to be the kill question when you would go in and ask for your exemption. They would say something along the lines, well, have you ever? I object to this, for example, because it used aborted babies to develop this, or used aborted babies in the manufacture. A couple of the vaccines are used in the manufacture, and all four of them, they were used in research and development. And so they would say, well, have you ever used medicine? Have you ever taken a medicine? Because all the medicines, they said, well, we don't know that all of them are, but they said, have you ever used a medicine that has any aborted? So when did you come to this belief? You don't have to answer a question like this. And now Washington State has removed that gotcha question. Because your sincerely held religious belief is not something that they are entitled to sit in judgment of. I mean, they can sweep away the First Amendment. But your religious belief, you don't have to defend that religious belief to these dictators. Now, for your employer, you may want to explain it. But use the key word sincerely held religious belief. As New American points out, pro-life advocates have a specific reason. It's well documented that COVID vaccines are all involved in the use of cell lines from aborted fetuses, either in research and development or during the manufacturing stage. For example, to make the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, scientists infect PER.C6 fetal cell lines to grow the adenovirus vector. All of those PER.C6 cells used to manufacture the Johnson & Johnson vaccine are descended from tissue taken from a 1985 abortion that took place in the Netherlands. Furthermore, when it comes to Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, fetal cell line HEK-293 was used during the research and development phase. All HEK-293 cells are descended from tissue taken from a 1973 abortion. Although the cells in question were grown in a laboratory and were not harvested directly from a newly aborted preborn baby, they are descended from tissue from an abortion. You know, there's a legal principle here. If you've got some evidence that was tainted at the beginning, they call that the fruit of a poison tree. And I think when we talk about this cannibal medicine, we could easily say that this is fruit of a poisonous tree. And again, if somebody wants to know what your religious beliefs are, when did you come to these religious beliefs? And what are the principles of this? And yada, yada, yada. You say, well, you know, since when do you have the authority to set in judgment over the sincerity of my sincerely held religious beliefs? That's a key phrase. As they point out, convention is wrong. It is not relevant what your personal beliefs are. However, if you can readily obtain a letter from a religious leader, that is the path of least resistance. That is a good idea. So as we look at this and we look at religious exemptions, understand there's also medical exemptions. Employees may obtain a medical exemption according to the Disabilities Act. And they quote the law here, and they give you the title of the law in this article from the New American. No covered entity shall discriminate against a qualified individual on the basis of disability in regard to job application procedures, hiring, advancement, discharge, etc., based on health issues. Now, unlike a religious belief exemption, they point out, you can't write your medical exemption. You're going to have to find a doctor who's going to do that. But if you can find an honest doctor, some common conditions listed by the CDC that are potential hazards for these Trump shots include weakened immune systems, autoimmune conditions, cancer, chronic lung diseases, including COPD, asthma, interstitial lung disease, cystic fibrosis, pulmonary hypertension, dementia, or other neurological conditions, diabetes, both type 1 or type 2, heart conditions, liver disease, overweight or obesity, pregnancy, and also a history of smoking, either in the past or currently, just to name a few. So there's a long list of things. Members of the armed forces may also consider a medical exemption. Medical exemption includes any medical contraindication relevant to a specific vaccine or other medication. And, of course, there's a lot of those that have already, as I pointed out, been listed by the CDC for these specific vaccines. So when we look at this, and as they point out in the New American article, and I had a listener who said, yeah, I agree, you know, I hadn't thought about the public demonstrations. And I'm not saying, I mentioned it, about public demonstrations. I said, you know, they can sometimes be counterproductive. New American in this article says we don't support public demonstrations. They said the debacle of January the 6th was such a trap. And I agree with that. And I said that from the very beginning. I thought it was a trap. I said the morning of, I'd been talking about it for weeks. As a matter of fact, I was talking about it before I was fired. Some key reasons I was fired. I talked about the lies of Steve Pachinik. I talked about the upcoming Stop the Steal being a grifting operation. And it was. And I hope you can see that now. And I said the morning of January the 6th on this program, I said, you're going to have agent provocateurs who are going to use this to demonize all of us. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. But that doesn't mean necessarily, I still do disagree with the New American. I think there are times when we do protest this. It's just that it is a very tricky thing. We have to be careful because you can always have agent provocateurs who can take over this. And as I said, I think the most effective protest is for us to live our lives, ignoring their prohibitions. Best example of that are the churches, and that's why they've come down so hard on the churches in Canada and California and other places. But they made the case at New American. They said good-natured people have resorted to forming protest crowds outside of prominent employers that are mandating vaccines, especially hospital systems that are threatening to terminate non-compliant medical professionals. And this is a mistake. Anarchy or virtually any form of public disorder creates an excuse for the government to show its muscle and exercise force against the dissidents, which turns out to be force against everyone. I'll put it this way. Ignoring for the moment the Boston Tea Party, which has a venerable tradition. If you have a situation, I think a public assembly is the key thing. you know, just like we're talking about a church or something, if you have a big public meeting and you're not marching down the streets, they can't portray you as somebody who's a troublemaker. And I think that's the key difference. You need to be able to have, and that's why it was protected by the founders of this country, the ability to be able to assemble and to redress your grievances. And so I think if you do that, if you hold a big meeting and you do it in a location, then at that point, it becomes very difficult for the government to portray you as aggressors. You're not on the street. You're not out there to riot. You're not out there to destroy public property. And if they come in and bother you at that point, it becomes very clear that they are the aggressors. Now, at the same time that we're saying this, here's another kind of protest that is happening. Because it is the world that is held hostage now for these last 535 days. I focused on America. I talked about, drew the analogy to the Iranian hostage situation. And that was even before they were putting masks on our faces. They didn't put masks over our eyes, but they did blindfold us against the truth with social media censorship and media propaganda. They put blindfolds on the people that were held hostage in Iran. For us, they tried to smother us and then to metaphorically blind us as to what is happening. In Australia, you have truckers beginning today. I don't know in terms of time differences. I mean, it may be going on for quite some time. But today was a day that the protests were supposed to start blocking major highways in Australia. They have drivers parked their large trucks and just stopped them. A banner was unfurled covering the front of both of the vehicles that stopped it, saying, "Truckies, keep Australia moving, not politicians." And I think that's very key. We need to peacefully make these statements. I think we need to show for our own good as well as for their good. We need to show that we are together on this, that we don't need them. That's the key thing that they need to understand. We do not need them. They need us. They need our compliance, and we must not give it. One driver named Brock in Australia did not give his surname. The drivers are protesting Queensland government's strict health orders, he said, that prevented all individuals from entering the state, except for essential workers, that they will define. He said, "We have to end all lockdowns. People go back to work. Kids go back to school." He said, "That's all we want out of this. We've just had enough. We've had a lot of the support, mate. The people that showed up today is amazing. We appreciate everyone that's coming down." He said, "But it's all about choice at the end of the day." That's right. Informed consent. And the consent is the most important part of that as well. But the informed part is what their censorship is directed at. But it says it's all about choice at the end of the day. If you don't want to get the vax, don't get the vax. If you want to get the vax, get it. Just don't keep locking people up. Because when you lock us down, when you take away our liberties, when you destroy the rule of law, when you act as tyrants, guess what? We're not so stupid that we don't understand what you're doing. And we're not going to passively sit by and be enslaved by you. That's why I say I don't rule out protests at all. I just think we need to do it wisely. Instead of, if you got a million people like they did in London, good. Fill up the streets. And they were peaceful there. And we don't have those big rallies here in the U.S. Most of the time you can fit people in a venue. And again, I think that's a safer approach. But we need to do whatever we can at this point. Because the longer this goes, the more difficult it's going to be to roll this back. As the truckers' rally comes a day before planned Australia and New Zealand-wide protest today. So that happened yesterday. Today, August the 31st, is when it is planned. They plan to block every highway entering into the state, all at the same time, so they can take back Australia. They're hoping for a repeat of the 1979 blockade when the government backed down to the truckers' demands. So hopefully that will happen. It's going to be painful. Supermarkets warned that fresh fruit and vegetables are likely to be in scarce supply, that many stores might have to start closing down by the middle of the week. But folks, you have to go through some pain in order to protect your liberty. And let's hope that this doesn't come to bloodshed. But if we do not do anything about this, they're going to lock us down so hard, the only way that we'll ever get out of this is with a bloody revolution. We don't want to have that. So now stand up, speak up, do it however you can. Hopefully, it's not going to be a situation where they can attack you. In London, thousands of people marched against the vaccine passports, but of course, the BBC completely shut down any coverage of it. Thousands more in a German protest on restrictions against people who don't get vaccinated. Again, in Greece, in Athens, a massive vaccine protest. The police there got violent with tear gas and water cannons, and they arrested 47 people. So real quickly, I want to just talk about some other sources where you can get information to push back against these vaccine mandates. Of course, America's frontline doctors have a lot of documents that are there. And those documents are going to change somewhat now with the legal prevarication of this so-called FDA approval, which is not a legitimate approval whatsoever. But again, you can find some documents there. You can find documents at Solari.com. And there's an article on VaccineImpact.com, resources for those wanting to write exemptions for mandatory COVID vaccines. They mention Liberty Counsel for legal help for religious exemptions, the National Vaccine Information Center, professionals for medical informed consent and non-discrimination in the UK, and again, Solari.com. New York, however, has now ended the religious exemption for COVID vaccine mandates. 450,000 healthcare workers are now affected. So we're just getting rid of the First Amendment completely. You know, if you show up to protest in many places, that's a reason enough for the police to attack you. You're not allowed to speak in the public square because, you know, we got COVID rules. And if you go online, you got corporate rules that are going to shut you down. You're not allowed to go to church. You're not allowed to have sincerely held religious beliefs. We're just going to end that for 500,000 healthcare workers in New York. The Department of Health there has made no allowances for religious objection to the shots. Meanwhile, we have some Catholic bishops, as reported by LifeSite News. Bishop Snyder grants religious exemption letter to avoid the jabs. He has made that available. Another New York priest, you know, where they've just gotten rid of the religious exemptions for state employees. This priest says you are under no obligation to receive the abortion-tainted vaccinations. He said the flesh of aborted cells is important, and they're not to be put in your body in any way, shape, or form. Do not let anyone confuse that for you. That's why I call it cannibal pharmaceuticals. Fauci, however, is now saying that we're going to have the booster shots maybe 8 months. Biden says, well, I can see that happening in 5 months. And then Fauci wants to talk about vaccinating kids, of course, right? I believe mandating vaccines for children to appear in school is a good idea. We've done this for decades, he said. And, yeah, I noticed, you know, we had Trump who was pushing that, telling people you got to get the shots. The FDA sees growing pressure to authorize vaccines for children under 12. Now, you notice what this is. This is coming from the Hill. Do you hear that? FDA sees growing pressure. This is not being led by science. It's not being led by a concern for safety or efficacy. This is political pressure. This is being reported by The Hill, and it's talking about political pressure. More than 100 House lawmakers, Democrats, wrote to the FDA last week asking for an update on its timelines for vaccines for kids. This is being pushed by politicians. This is a political pandemic. This is Congress practicing medicine. The FDA, they said, this is Ro Khanna, who is not a doctor. Even if you were a doctor, he's not my doctor. But Ro Khanna, a Democrat from California, says the FDA seems oblivious to the urgency that millions of parents with young kids feel about vaccination. The American Academy of Pediatrics is pressing them to move on. This is about politics. It's about lobbying. They said one complicating factor is the potential for rare cases of heart inflammation, but let's not worry about that. No. And Francis Collins, Fauci's boss at the NIH, says that, I don't think it's going to happen for the kids down to 5-year-old until, I don't know, the end of this year. We're only looking at a couple of months here. Fauci says that the shots could be administered to everyone after the age of 5. Fauci and Biden. So I guess Biden is also getting in playing doctor. We could call him, I guess, what, Dr. Dementia? You know, there used to be a Dr. Demento. But here's what Fauci had to say in an interview with a fake Jake Tapper.
I want to ask you about some local issues. Culver City Unified School District in California became the first public school district in the U.S. to require vaccinations, not only for teachers and staff, but also for eligible students who are 12 and over. Now that the vaccine has full approval from the FDA, the Pfizer vaccine, would you like to see it mandated for students elsewhere in the U.S.? And once it's approved for kids under 12, should it be mandated for them too?
You know, I know that a lot of people will be pushing back against that, but if you get the imprimatur about the safety and the strong benefit-risk ratio for the children, when that gets established, which I believe it certainly will, by the FDA and the ACIP, I believe that mandating vaccines for children to appear in school is a good idea. And remember, Jake, this is not something new. We have mandates in many places in schools, particularly public schools.
I also don't believe in drugs. For years, I paid my people extra so they wouldn't do that kind of business. Somebody comes to them and says, I have powders. If you put up $3,000, $4,000 investment, we can make 50,000 distributing, so they can't resist. I want to control it as a business, to keep it respectable. I don't want it near schools. I don't want it sold to children. That's an infamia.
You want a child to come in? We've done this for decades and decades, requiring polio, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis. So this would not be something new.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
It's true. I have a lot of friends in politics. But they wouldn't be friendly very long if they knew my business was drugs instead of gambling, which they regard as a harmless vice. But drugs is a dirty business.
That's right. Drugs is a dirty business. It's filled with graft, greed, corruption, disregard of human life. We've had these same people who gave us the opioid epidemic, the U.S. military guarding the poppy fields where the vast majority of the world's supply came from, the people looking out for the interest of the pharmaceutical companies like Johnson & Johnson, who've now been given a catbird seat in the vaccine industry, you know, brought them in. And then, of course, you heard the Don there, Trump, the mafia Don. Yeah, they got to get the shots. He laid the foundation for that. You know, you heard Fauci, and when I was at InfoWars, and he said that's, you know, it's like, who can support this guy anymore? That was spring of 2019. How could you possibly support this guy when he is supporting? That was 2019. In New York and in California, you had the big fights. Do you remember that? You had that pharmaceutical whore, Senator Pan, or whatever, State Senator Pan in California, and you had the massive pushback of parents saying, we don't want to have vaccine mandates for our kids to go to school, these MMR things. And they did it over their objections. In New York, they came after the Orthodox Jewish community in a hard way. And so that's the context in which they asked Donald Trump. I said, oh, they got to get the shots, the measles thing, this is going around. It's like, all right, we're done. This guy, he's sold out. And when you look at this, these people don't even have the ethics of the mafia, do they? Godfather Fauci and the Don Trump. Yeah, you don't want to keep it away from the schools, do you? No, you want to make the drugs a condition of going to schools. I believe mandating vaccines for children to appear in schools is a good idea, said Fauci. The intention is for all the evidence to be published, but the evidence isn't necessary in the hands. So whenever possible, we encourage the evidence to be published, but, you know, the timing is not in our hands. In other words, we're going to do this, whether we got the evidence for it or not. Big Pharma's conflict conflicts of interest around jabbing children and highlighting the fact that the evidence for jabbing children is not in the hands of the UK, not in the hands of the government officials here in the U.S., except that it is. They've had these backdoor meetings with these people. One person says, well, I never believed in conspiracy theories. I mean, I'm quite a grounded fellow, but wow. You know, and of course, he's got some profanities in here. He says, when they keep pushing and pushing and pushing on this, I can only begin to wonder that something insidious is afoot. Oh, yes, the game is afoot, Sherlock. It's a lot of evidence that this is exactly what is happening. Finally, you know, we have the Mississippi governor, Tate Reeves, and I pointed out how last week this Republican had been part of the effort to put in escalating fines that topped out if they put you in quarantine based on some kind of a phony test and you violate that quarantine, you could get up to 5 years in prison or a $5,000 fine. And then he comes out and he speaks to the press, and they use his remarks, and I think probably not twisting his remarks. I think his intention was to mock Christians who had voted for him in a gentle way. You know, he throws out the, this is on the 29th. So this is on Sunday that this article is written. And he says, you know, people in Mississippi are not as afraid of this pandemic because they, quote, believe in eternal life. He said, when you believe that life on earth is just a blip on the screen, you don't have to be so scared of things, he said. And so this is a problem. They're having a problem scaring these Christians. Because we do believe that life on earth is just a blip. And it's that kind of conviction that had people at the Alamo. It made absolutely no sense for them at the Alamo to stand on that. Unless they believed that was not the end of their existence. And that they were doing something that they could hand down to their children. It's why it's very difficult for them to shut down Christians. That's why these authoritarians, the Marxists and the rest of them, they will go for the Christians first. You know, we're not out there. We're not suicide bombers. When we talk about martyrs, we talk about people. The word for martyr was witness. The martyrs, the early Christian martyrs, were people who were witnesses of what had happened, of what was written in the Bible. And they refused to recant on those stories. And they would rather die than to say that what they had witnessed had not happened. And the Muslims perverted that, made a martyr somebody who would kill other people in order to get to heaven. It's a complete perversion of what that was. But again, why can't we scare Christians like we do everybody else? He said, God also tells us, said Governor Reeves in Mississippi, to take necessary precautions, and we have opportunities and abilities to do that, and we should all do that. And I encourage everybody to do this, or I'll give you a $5,000 fine, 5 years in jail, for violating my arbitrary, unconstitutional lockdown orders. I had a listener who sent this to me anonymously, and well, not anonymously, he gave me some credentials on it, but I keep the people involved in this out of it. We talk about the military, we talk about the betrayal that we've seen this last week in Afghanistan, the last few days. The betrayal, for example, of the Americans who are left behind. And this is a screenshot of some text messages back and forth between some officers, fairly high ranking. Person says, so frustrating. Japan literally has a death rate of zero because there's no fat people in the country. Lucky for Moderna, they can't get sued for injecting metal filings into recipients. See, they knew. The person that he's talking to replies and says, yep, because according to Webster's recent definition change of a vaccine, the RNA therapeutic is now defined as a vaccine. If you don't like the truth, change it. I talked about that as well. It's a very simple definition. They now extended it significantly, and gave detailed examples. Oh, mRNA. See, that's an example of what we have for our new definition of a vaccine. Finally, the other person who was snapshot here says, we've been having vaccinated Marines hospitalized for elevated heart enzymes. The division is starting to freak out. When you have the elevated heart enzymes, that's indication of myocarditis, pericarditis, heart attack, that type of thing. That's what they look at. That was the basis, whether people have heart pains or something like that. The way you determine if it's the heart, you look at the enzymes. And so this is affecting Marines. And yet they're telling people this is a readiness issue. They're telling the military, you've got to have this. It's far more dangerous. And as I pointed out yesterday, Dr. Lee Merritt, who spent many years in the Navy as a physician, I had her in a couple of weeks ago. She pointed out then, these heart issues are lifelong. These heart issues take your life expectancy down. And she pointed out that there have already been more servicemen and women killed from these vaccines than from COVID. And more killed from these vaccines than were killed by the suicide bomber last week. That's it for our broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.